using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday the 13th, year of our Lord 2021, day 517 of America Held Hostage. Well, this morning I told Karen it's like going back to the 1970s. We're back to Vietnam. Nixon taking us off the gold standard because today is the 50th anniversary of Nixon taking us off the gold standard. We're going to have Tony Arterburn joining us to talk about that. And of course, we're going to talk about the Saigon moment that is now happening in Afghanistan. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In the Wuhan lab and who's responsible for it? That virus, number one. Number two, what happened on 3 November of 2020? Who's responsible and who's going to be held accountable? And the third is what happened on 1-6? Was it a failure of intelligence as we've been processed and been told? Or is it a failed intelligence operation against the American people? You get to the bottom of those three things, you find out who's responsible, and you hold them accountable, and you're going to get your country back.
Is that right? Are we going to get our country back? Are those the three issues before us now? You know, we're looking, as I said before during the introduction, things are looking a lot like the 1970s, the chaotic collapse of the Vietnam War, the chaotic collapse of Afghanistan. We're looking at not only what happened 50 years ago, what is about to happen in terms of completely reorienting our currency, our monetary standard, that is really what we're at the cusp of. So it's a good idea to take a look at how they have tricked us in the past. But when we look at this, are those really the three things that are before us right now? You know, that part of it, what has happened in the last year, is not a repeat of history, quite frankly. It's something that is really pretty unique, very global in its orientation. And we've never seen this kind of global takedown, a technocratic takedown. President Trump has blasted the $3.5 trillion communist plan to kill America, he said. Was that right? It seems to me, I recall that he had a $3.7 trillion communist plan. He's right about this. This is a communist plan. But when you shut down the country, and when you tell small businesses that they're not allowed to operate, when you funnel massive amounts of money to the pharmaceutical companies and you put out a lethal vaccine, not even a vaccine, it's a genetic code injection, you put that out and you know that it's going to be mandated. As a matter of fact, you know you're going to push these mandates through the corporations and the private entities because you don't want a due process challenge. And we just had a ruling, in a sense, a refusal to hear lower court on vaccine mandates. We'll be talking about that as well. So when we look at this, and we take people's jobs, and we put them on a stimulus check, and we put them on extended unemployment as Trump began, you know, that's why I call him President Trump. He set the example. He set the legal precedents for what's going on right now. We had these crazy ideas about universal basic income, which is Marxism on steroid. And everybody looked at that. Are you kidding me? Trillions of dollars to do what is now essentially being talked about as a monthly stimulus check? Were you going to give the CDC the authority to shut down everything, including private property rights, and to control our movement in a way that the Soviet Union and Mao never did? Yeah, we've got a communist plan, all right. These are neo-Marxists. These globalists, And Trump was their man. So you want to go back and you do you really think, as Bannon said at the Cyber Symposium, that the big three issues are Trump's not getting reelected after he locked the country down, after he guaranteed that there was going to be fraud, a mail-in election, after he would not show no leadership whatsoever in even holding a rally, let alone firing Fauci? No, he funded the control mechanism of this. And he funded the lockdown. That national executive order, national state of emergency, funded the lockdown and put out $3.7 trillion in debt. And so that was the argument that I had last year, all year at InfoWars. I believe I was the first person there to talk about the connection to Wuhan. It was patently absurd that it's going to jump from bats in a wet market and all that nonsense. Besides the fact that the biosafety level 4 lab, the only one they had that had been involved in research of this type, was right there. It was obvious from the very beginning what was going on with that. But they want to continue to push fear. You know what Bannon is doing? He's pushing the fear. He's pushing the pandemic fear. And he's pushing Trump as savior. You know, we look at November 3rd and January the 6th. Those are the other two things. If you're going to focus on Wuhan, you're going to continue to push that fear. That lockdown. That's exactly what happened all last year. And that's what InfoWars did. They focused on that. I said, yeah, it probably happened. And you have to be careful because I've been following the gain-of-function research since 2014. But folks, the worst thing that could happen was what Trump did to us. It was a communist plan. It was a globalist plan. And he set the precedent. It's being expanded now by Biden. And ignore people like Mike Lindell and Bannon who are grifting you. As a matter of fact, when Trump put this thing out, he put this out as part of a fundraiser for his Save America PAC. He said, well, you know what? We got $3.5 trillion communist plan to kill America. To join his $3.7 trillion plan last year to kill America. So send me your money. And I'm sure he'll do as much with that money as he did to reform elections. If you want to talk about election reform, it begins with the Republican-Democrat monopoly on the ballots, or Republican and Democrat monopolies on the debates. Then you can add things like make sure we've got voter ID, which is something Republicans are on, Democrats are not on. But you need to have voter ID. You need to have all the elections on one day. Make it the weekend. You might make it 2 days just to make it everybody happy. But it's a very limited amount of time. No advanced election, no extended elections, no mail-in elections. Tightly control any absentee ballots. And if you want to get involved in this and you want to make sure this is going to work, you get rid of all electronic voting, not just Dominion. You get rid of all of them. You go to paper ballots. And those of you who are so upset about all this stuff, you show up and you watch what's happening on the polls on that day. That's when you show up. Not 2 months later. Not 8 months later. Thank you, Travis. That's the way you do it. See, the American government knows how to do it. That picture Travis put up there? You see the guy in the Arab garb or whatever? He's got a purple finger. When the Americans ran the elections in Iraq, what did they do? We're going to vote on one day. You're going to show up with identification. And once you vote, you're going to get an indelible ink on your finger so you can't go to another polling station and do it there. It's just that simple. It's very simple. You go low-tech. You have people who are involved, who care, and who care about this before it all collapses. Trump didn't care. I am so fed up with what's going on with Lindell and Bannon and Trump and Flynn and these people. They're trying to push us, folks, into a civil war. They are misdirecting you from the key issues. The key issues are the lockdown, the deficit, the vaccine, the mandates, the identification, the passports. Those are the key issues. And, of course, the global conspiracy. It is a, how can anybody deny that this is a conspiracy? All of these people are doing the same thing. So, yeah. Don't forget the crazy new deal, he says, the Green New Deal. You're being robbed. Yeah, or don't forget the crazy universal basic income, which is what Trump put in. Now, the Democrats, the $3.5 trillion package, is essentially an extension of what Trump was doing. Because all of this lockdown and the steal and the reset that he initiated was set up initially to address climate panic, climate alarmism. And because they couldn't get people that alarmed about something that's not happening, obviously, you know, there's no more man-made global warming than there is a pandemic. Yeah, I know that's going to set some people off, but that's the truth. They're both bluffs. They're both bluffs from scientific authorities. They both hide their data. Just like we saw the CDC. Well, you know, we have this new approach. Can we see the data? Well, no, the data is not available. How can you make a decision based on science when you don't have the data available? You'd have the data available to start with, right? No. We're going to put out the policy and then we'll backfill it with some data later on. That's not science. That's tyranny. That's Soviet-style tyranny. So when you look at the things they're going to do for the in the name of saving us all from global warming, the Civilian Climate Corps, they're going to pay millions of young participants $15 an hour to weatherize buildings and to cap off oil wells. Because, you know, we don't want to have any energy to run the grid. I was just talking about Norway this week. Norway is adding new sources of oil because you've got to have something to power the grid. They want to take us to zero. Zero energy, zero lifestyle, and zero population. Not zero population growth, zero population. Taxpayer-backed clean electricity standard to get rid of coal and natural gas as well as oil. Investments in electric vehicles so that we can burden the power grid, as we're starving it on the supply side, we can burden it on the demand side to bring it all down. This is a planned destruction. These people are gremlins who are tearing apart the fabric of our society, the moral fabric of our society, and the practical life-sustaining aspects of our society at the same time. Then you're going to have things like a universal pre-kindergarten for 3 and 4 year old children, because they can't get them young enough to start brainwashing them. An expansion of Obamacare, repealing the $10,000 cap for state and local tax deductions while they raise taxes everywhere and create an army of nearly 90,000 new IRS agents. Biden says he's checking to see whether the Constitution allows him to seize the means of production. That's from the Babylon Bee. But it's only just pull back a hair from what he's actually doing. Yeah. Seizing the means of production. See, that's actually what Trump did with the lockdown. He financially incentivized that, and he seized the means of production. And he began doing centralized control. As I said, we look like we're going back to the 1960s, the 1970s. We have Afghanistan collapsing like Vietnam. We have the 50th anniversary of Nixon taking us off the gold standard, and Tony Arterman is going to be, of Wise Wolf Gold, is going to be talking to us in the third hour. We're going to look at that and what is ahead, because what is ahead is another reset of our monetary system. And then we have this. We're going back to segregation, aren't we? Turning the clock back to the 1960s again. You know, Vietnam, the gold standard, and segregation. This is in Atlanta, and a mother, a black mother, claimed her daughter's school was segregating classes into black and white. She was outraged. She said, but actually this is coming from a black teacher telling me this. Because they're going back into Jim Crow. And I think maybe that's really what we ought to call CRT. You know, it stands for critical race theory. But actually what it stands for is it's Jim Crow time. There's no J in there, but just say the CR is for Crow. You know, this is a Crow time. This is going back to Jim Crow, where we segregate everybody. And we're going to have societal castes, a caste system like they do in India. That's what intersectionality is. It's ranking everybody by their skin color, by their, you know, the other things that they identify with, instead of looking at people according to the content of their character or according to their merit for a job. No. We're going to do it based on sex and based on sexual identity fantasies, based on skin color, you name it. But we're going to have a caste system where everybody gets ranked depending on how many of these different boxes that you check. And while we had Jim Crow in the back, as the mother said, we've lost sleep. Like, we're trying to figure out why a person would do this. She went to the local television station. She said, first, it was just disbelief that I was having this conversation in 2021 with a person who looks just like me, a black woman. They're segregating classrooms. You can't segregate classrooms. You can't do that. See, the basis, and I say many times that history does not repeat itself, but it rhymes. So here's the rhyme. In 1960, we had segregation because black people were bad. In 2021, we have segregation because white people are bad. See? It's just that simple. It's essentially the same thing. Just different labels. We mix the labels around so people don't notice. Think it's completely different. In principle, it's exactly the same. This Georgia elementary school just outside Atlanta alleges that it's separating black students to give them, quote, more opportunities. She said her daughter was being grouped into a class for black-only students. The mother claimed her daughter's school is segregating classes into black and white, and that's exactly what is happening, folks. That is really what's behind this Crow time, CRT, Jim Crow time. Even public school teachers are now turning to homeschooling, says a report. This is from WND. It's a report from the Washington Examiner, and they went around the country talking to people who were previously teachers in the government school system and decided to homeschool. Here's Amanda Horschelman, who was a fifth-grade teacher in Texas and Georgia. But they recently moved to Iowa. She had obstacles finding daycare for her five-year-old daughter, and so she made the break and decided to teach her daughters at home. She said, I never thought I would homeschool. My mom worked all the time when I was growing up, and I thought I would always do that. If you would have asked me 10 years ago, I would have never thought I'd be doing this, but there was a shift in my heart. Another former public school teacher is Joanna Duffy, who left a district in Florida when her son started school. She said it was when COVID was getting really bad. We pulled him out, and it was the best thing we ever did. What she considered at first was a short-term resolution has now turned into a long-term plan. Another is Kristen Rhodes, who recently told The Atlantic she decided against public school kindergarten for her son because of requirements to wear masks all the time. The examiner said the pandemic has created an opportunity for all types of families who would have never otherwise considered homeschooling. The general lack of coordination in public schools, coupled with inconsistent guidance from the CDC on safety and masks, has pushed thousands of parents to give homeschooling a try. Another individual who lives in Virginia said homeschool, quote, gives the opportunity to tailor what we teach our son. We've been able to work with our son to go at his pace, which is something that none of the other kids had at public school because it's a factory system. It's a one-size-fits-all. I love the cartoon that I saw one time that showed a bunch of kids, and they were dressed up in a basketball uniform, but it was the same uniform for each and every one of them, even though the kids were radically different in ages and sizes. there's, you know, some of them could barely fit into it, and the other ones, it was just hanging off of them. They're having to hold it up. That's what the school system is like. It's a one-size-fits-all factory system that grinds their spirit into the dust, as well as pollutes it. The percentage of these households that had at least one homeschool child, that's how they define a homeschooling household, rose. And now, when Trump locked everything down in the spring of 2020, there were 5.4% of the families homeschooled. By fall, it had more than doubled to 11.1%, and now it's nearly doubled again as of May of this year. It is 19.5%. Think about that. It's gone up nearly four times, which, as I've said before, is kind of the silver lining. You know, God works in mysterious ways as wonders to perform. He plants his feet in the sea, footsteps in the sea, and rides upon the storm, doesn't he? We don't see where this is headed, but I think that has been a major thing. And I think it's going to happen now, after this happened with our kids, it's going to be happening with a lot of us. We're going to have to work from home because of the vaccine mandates and that kind of insanity. It's time to get out. It's not going to be easy to reorganize our lives, but we'll look back on it and we'll be happy that we did it. Speaking of the secretive government, the NSA has awarded $10 billion contract to Amazon, but it's secret. You can't even see what's in it. Think about that. Think about the size of that contract, $10 billion. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we didn't have a $10 billion budget with the federal government. But, of course, you have to adjust that for the devaluation of the currency. And so if you go back and look at this, if you look at the actual dollar figures, well, you know, you could go back to probably about, I'm looking at the numbers here, about 1990, when you start looking at a $1 trillion budget deficit, or you look at what the military spending was. I mean, we're talking about an NSA contract that is the size or bigger than the military budget within our lifetime. And you can't see anything in it. It's completely dark. What a model that is. What a metaphor that is for what our country has become. Just outright theft, being ruled by corporations and by the military-industrial complex and the surveillance state. That's the key thing. When we come back, we're going to take a look at our governors. I wanted to talk about this yesterday, the goobers of our nation. And I also want to talk about this executive order by Bill Lee, the governor of Tennessee. A lot of people have been very concerned about this. We'll talk about his history of executive orders and what is in this one when we come back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
Governors of our nation, we're going to get gubernatorial here, or we could just say the goobers of our nation. As we had Cuomo resign this week, you have an article from the Kansas City Star saying, well, with New York's Governor Cuomo out, who will replace him as the country's worst governor? Right? So who will be the worst governor? Well, when you look at this article, this writer is really focusing on the pandemic. And so who is going to be the best that's out there? Well, the people who give us the most lockdown, who promise us the most safety, who take away the most liberty. That's her yardstick. And so by that yardstick, I would have thought that Cuomo was the best guy, right? You know, even though he killed a lot of people in the nursing home. I mean, he was taking freedom left and right. So when they look at this, she goes through and criticizes anybody who is less draconian. So her yardstick, basically, for a good governor is who is the most draconian. And I loved the New York Post cover when he resigned. At the end of his grope, creep out, Governor Cuomo finally resigns. And I think that even though we've had some people come out and say, well, it doesn't go away. The nursing home issue does not go away because if a crime was committed, we'll still investigate that. No, they're not going to do that. They're going to move on. They're sweeping this under the carpet, and that is the bigger crime that is not going to be investigated. Wasting energies on distractions like this is the last thing the state government should be doing, said Cuomo, in terms of his groping gate. What he really doesn't want you to look at is the nursing home issue. So this really is a misdirection. It is a distraction away from this. Cuomo announced his resignation in an effort to head off likely impeachment after a devastating report on his conduct. Now, it was not his conduct with the nursing homes. Again, that was the only thing they cared about. And so now the New York governor, who will become this lieutenant governor, who will become governor, perhaps she'll be the worst governor. She's been right there with Cuomo on many, many gun control issues. Going back to 2018, she's pushed red flag legislation, advancing gun safety, as she points out, the SAFE Act that they pushed through back in January 2013. So she's going to try to establish her credentials, I think, as a gun controller, but she could possibly be the new worst governor. We had the former Illinois governor, Rod Blagojevich. I never did figure out how to pronounce his name. He is pointing out that it's really the massacre at the nursing homes that is the bigger scandal and the one that they're sweeping under the carpet. But a Democrat in New York, a Democrat Senator Kaminsky, says, no, this won't go anywhere. It shouldn't go anywhere. When I was at the Department of Justice, said Kaminsky, whether someone was in office or out of office had no bearing on the evidence that you have. If you collect evidence and it amounts to crime, you bring that case, period. But if he's not there and you're not seeing him, if he's gone away, out of sight, out of mind, and they've done a pretty good job of sweeping this whole nursing home debacle under the carpet, putting very sick people in a nursing home with people who are very elderly, who have comorbidities. That was to save everybody, right? So they won't be investigating that. Larry Elder, looking at one of our other worst governors in California, who is now facing recall, that is Newsom. And isn't it interesting that Newsom and Cuomo were the first ones to do lockdown? You had Trump put out the financial incentives for it, giving the legal pretense that they could do this on the Friday the 13th. And then over the weekend, you had Newsom and you had Cuomo lock down their states. And now where are they? This is, I think, the defining issue. A smart politician is going to understand that. But I think we have some pretty smart politicians. The problem is they're not honest. And the problem is they don't care anymore about what the people who are voting care about. It doesn't matter. You don't count. It's the people who count the votes that count. And so they're not responding to what we want. If they were, they would be following this. Now, you do have Larry Elder, who's made it very clear that he's going to stop all the lockdowns, he's going to stop the mask mandates and so forth. And Larry Elder is a formidable opponent for Newsom. Again, he's been a talk show host, and he's covered these issues for a long time. He's got a long record. They're trying to make it look radical, but he's a pretty mainstream conservative Republican. He's not very radical at all. Unfortunately, when they look at this, they say San Diego, it's actually San Diego Union Tribune is where I got it, but it's actually from the LA Times. And what they're trying to do is paint him as too conservative for California and out of touch with California values. And so how they do this, they say, well, he has on occasion fueled skepticism of climate change. See, there's no skepticism of climate change allowed, just like the pandemic or the vaccine or the masks. Skepticism is not allowed. And so I've had this argument for the longest time. That's why all of this is just recycled stuff. there is no science, if there's no skepticism, if there is no ability to challenge authority. So he has been a skeptic of climate change. He depicted global warming as a crock and as a myth. He said the medical establishment, professional victims exaggerated the dangers of secondhand tobacco smoke. He offered no pushback when a doctor last month called into his national syndicated radio show to say that the so-called vaccines were dangerous. He didn't object when the physician implied that Bill Gates might have backed the experimental immunizations as a form of population control. They put experimental in quotes here in this LA Times story. Well, you know, Trump backed it, and that's the big issue that I have with Larry Elder. He's a big Trump supporter, and that's one of the things that could really damage him is if they tie him to Trump in California. He has called the Roe v. Wade ruling, they said, which created a legal right to abortion, one of the worst decisions the Supreme Court ever handed down. Well, he's right about that. Described abortion as murder. He's right about that. Said rules governing the procedure should be left to the states. He's right about that. He has embraced the libertarian truism, says the LA Times. They call it a truism, that citizens have become too reliant on an overbearing government. Now, who would think something that crazy after what's happened in the last year? Is there an issue about that? Is there any doubt that the purpose of the government this last year, this overbearing government with its dictatorial orders that are not based on science but based on their edicts from so-called self-professed authorities, that the purpose of that is to take everything from us and to make us dependent on the government? Is that something that we even have to question anymore? I think that political science is settled. Elder implied that he might declare a state of emergency in order to fire bad teachers, estimating that they make up between 5 and 7% of the state's public school faculty of about 300,000. He also added he could declare another emergency to suspend the California Environmental Quality Act, the law requiring environmental review of building projects. He depicted the law as part of a bureaucracy that is treating contractors and developers alike as if they are criminals. Now, you notice there's a trend here. And quite frankly, I think it's an absolute waste of time at this point in time to run for any legislative office because they're too heavily controlled by the parties. If you were to get into an executive position, and by that I mean something like we have in Texas, you know, everywhere, sheriffs, but also in Texas we have county judges, or if you're a mayor, or if you are a governor, or if you are a president, there are some things that you can do. But if you're going to be part of a legislative body, there's nothing that you can do. But one of the things that Larry Elder keeps coming back to is the idea of executive orders. You just heard that. We're going to have an executive order so we can allow people to build homes. We're going to have an executive order so we can allow people to fire bad teachers and so forth. And I think he's onto something here. Because it was President Grant who said the best way that you get rid of a bad law is to rigorously enforce it. What we've seen, especially over this last year, we've seen governors, Republican and Democrat, acting like petty tyrants. We've had Brad Little in Idaho dismissing the legislature completely and saying, no, you can't meet. You're not going to enact any bills that are going to limit my powers or to give back some of the basic liberties that people have always enjoyed in our society. He sent them away. Then he wrote some legislation himself saying, we will give businesses, if they kowtow to us and do every ritual that we demand, we will give them legal protection. But if they don't, they can be sued out of business by everybody. He called them back and told them to pass that, and they obediently did pass it. We've seen governors become tyrants. We've seen presidents become tyrants. And we've seen local executives become tyrants. So if you were to do something like he is doing here, I think it'd be an effective strategy to start to issue tyrannical executive orders that free people up and just overturn, like he's talking about overturning, these Environmental Quality Act law. Just overturn it. Say, nah, I'm just getting rid of it. You do that enough, and I guarantee you these legislatures will take away the executive order powers of these governors, which is what needs to be done. So take that power, abuse it in the direction of freedom. You know, be a benevolent dictator, of course. And just get rid of one law after the other. Nope, not going to do that one, not going to do that one, going to pardon everybody. You've seen a little bit of that with DeSantis, who says, yeah, if they issue any people citations or fines for masks or whatever, I'll just write it off. And so they stopped. But you do that enough, and I think you would get these state legislatures to say, maybe we shouldn't allow that much power in one office. And that would be a win as well. He says he has now recanted, and he has bowed to the superstition of climate change. Oh, I do believe. It's like the Cowardly Lion. I do believe in climate change. I do believe in climate change. yeah. If you're going to say something, hopefully, you know, the science hasn't changed, Larry. So if you're basing your opposition to climate change on science, that hasn't changed. As a matter of fact, we've got even more evidence that that's not the case. And if you're paying attention to the people who are lying to us and the experts who are hiding the data, as we saw with ClimateGate, going back to the mid-2000s even, if you pay attention to that, there's absolutely no reason to change. So that's a concerning thing to see that he is malleable on something that is that important. And, of course, you'll hear the people say, well, he's just playing 4D chess. He's telling people he probably really doesn't buy into climate change, and he's probably just telling people that so he can get elected and do good stuff, right? If you're going to take that approach, every time you do that, it gets easier to lie to people, just as Giuliani was saying. You're going to throw a little bit of garbage out there. It's okay to lie to people when it comes to politics. If you embrace that, if you embrace that our leaders should not have character or integrity, it's called integrity, isn't it? When you say what you mean and you do what you say, it's called integrity. And so I would like to know what new evidence Larry Elder has seen that climate change no longer is really existing now. You know, please enlighten me, because I've seen just the opposite. And so maybe, you know, he was like some of these other talk show hosts who had positions on the pandemic or on the vaccine. They didn't really know why. It was just a political position they had. It wasn't a principle. It wasn't based on empiricism, scientific evidence, or data. It was just a position. Politicians have positions. Statesmen have principles. Too bad we don't have statesmen anymore. In terms of the other stuff, they kind of walk back and say, well, you know, you have that doctor who called in and talked about these experimental vaccines. His spokeswoman, Ying Ma, said in an email, some of these statements are taken out of context while others reflect prevailing notions of a political bias. For instance, there's a clear inability to comprehend why a talk radio host might want to allow a caller to express views different from his own, or why anyone would consider unconventional assertions presented by reputable researchers. So, and I understand that. You know, I'll have people on, and I'll let them say some things that I don't agree with, let them make their case without debating them. And you know, nobody agrees on each and everything, and I think that the best thing I can do is, you know, if I got somebody on, I typically don't bring people on just to debate them. I don't usually bring on guests that I fundamentally disagree with. So when I have somebody on, it's usually because there's a fundamental agreement, but we might disagree on some details, and I don't hammer them on that. So I understand that he would do that. And I also understand that Larry Elder has made it very clear there's not going to be any mask mandates. There's not going to be any vaccine passports. There's not going to be any vaccine mandates. That's good. So the rest of the stuff, he can leave that to other people to get involved in. Clint Eastwood, he said, sent a message of support to him. He said, Eastwood made my day. I'm sure it did. Newsom, meanwhile, in his campaign, he decided that the thing to do was to release a convicted murderer who buried a mentally disabled man alive. Alive. To cover up a robbery. What this guy did was, the AP reported, Newsom has allowed the release of a killer who served 4 decades in prison for the murder of a developmentally disabled California man who he buried alive. He murdered a 20-year-old Fresno area resident, and he did it to cover up a burglary. He was 17 years old at the time. Newsom determined that he does not pose a current unreasonable risk to public safety. Really? Okay. I don't think is really going to help him too much in his campaign. So now Newsom, at the beginning of this, was taking the tact that to just tell people, just vote no on the recall. And I think as I look at it, there was so much talk about that, that my understanding of it was that there's two-part question. The first question is, should he stay or should there be a recall? And if you get more than 50% of the people, just a simple majority that says that he should go, then they have a list of candidates that you pick from. And I thought, because of the way Newsom was doing this, that he was ineligible to be in that second list if you said he ought to go. But I think actually he is. And so he's got a lot of people now who are complaining, saying, you know, there's two parts to this. And he's not telling people about that other part. So then when you have a crowded field, you have one person, there's not going to be any runoff. So it's whoever gets the most votes. I mean, you could have somebody who gets 30% of the vote. And if that's the highest percentage that anybody gets, that person becomes governor without a runoff. That part I do know for sure. So it is kind of a wide-open process here. Their strategy had been to paint all the Republicans alike, all the opponents alike, and that is really the issue, is that everybody's... He's got some Democrats who are running against him, and there's a YouTube star who might pull some votes from Newsom as well. But he's one of these guys like Andrew Yang. He's got kind of a policy wonk platform, and he's got 10 items on how he wants to rule your life, like Andrew Yang did. He knows better than you how to run your life. It's not about liberty. It's about, look, this is what I'm going to do to you, then I'm going to do that to you, and then I'm going to do this to everybody else. And we've had enough of that, haven't we? But he does have a few people like that, and that guy's got he shows up in the polls significantly. So when you look at what might happen, he's still in pretty safe shape, I think, because most of the people who are opposing him, it's going to divide the vote between Republicans, unless one person like Elder can show up. And it appears that he believes that that is the case right now. The last poll, in spite of what Reason is saying, it's not dead even as to whether to keep him or to put him out. No, in the last poll they did, he was down by more than 10% in terms of getting rid of him. And so they've just been trying to say, this will be a huge win for Republicans. You don't want to see that happen. And these people are Trump anti-vaxxers, and you don't want to see a Trump anti-vaxxer get in as governor. So this is going to be, to a large degree, a referendum on the lockdown, the vaccines, the mandates, the passports, all of that sort of thing. And so now he's finally pointed to Larry Elder. He sees Larry Elder as a threat. And in his attacks, he says that Elder does not support the minimum wage, that he's anti-abortion. But Elder says, well, I'm not going to change the minimum wage, and I'm not trying to overturn Roe v. Wade. I don't even have the power to control abortion as a governor. Wrong. Wrong. But, of course, this is the conventional wisdom. He says, I've been in Kern County these last few days, and no one has asked about the minimum wage or these other issues that the media and Newsom are talking about. And so then he pivots to the housing issues. He pivots to crime, just like I'm talking about. You know, he didn't mention this particular case where Newsom pardons this guy who buried a mentally disabled person alive. But that's okay. He's not a threat to society anymore. Elder says he will, talking again about his executive orders to declare a crisis in housing, a crisis in water, a crisis in education. And I think that's a good idea. I think he should do that. And again, let's abuse the power so that we can end the executive order power. One of the things that I wanted to play for you when we talk about bad governors, and that's how we started out with this whole thing, I want to suggest that perhaps maybe one of the worst governors might be Asa Hutchinson out of Arkansas. I want you to see what his constituents said to him, how they're yelling and screaming at him, again, about the issue of our lifetime. And do not let people like Bannon distract you. The issue of our lifetime is not, how did China take the election? How did China lock us down with a Wuhan virus bioweapon? And then, what did the deep state do to us on January the 6th? Isn't that amazing? These same people who pushed everybody into that idiotic, desperate attempt. I 4 days before I was fired, I pointed out, I said, there's no time to do any of this. This is what would have to happen. These are the states where you had a close election and you have a Republican legislature and two of them. You have Republican governors, and in two of them, you have Democrat governors. So I said, if you could get three of these states and you could convince them to send a different slate of electors, then you would have a chance to have competing slate of electors that would probably still go to the courts to decide whether it was the governor or the legislature that could send those electors. But of course, the Constitution says it's the legislature. But you know, we never know if the Supreme Court is going to follow the Constitution or their own whims. But still, that was what needed to be done. And they weren't even focused on that. And then we found out later that the first $8,000 that you sent to Trump went into his pocket with him splitting it with the RNC. And then if you gave more than $8,000, then he would spend that surplus on investigating the election. The whole thing was a grifting scam. But let's take a look at what the issue is. Not what Bannon said the issue is, but what the real issue is. And you can see it in this back and forth with Governor Asa Hutchinson, as people are very upset about him. He was the governor who said, well, I'm very sorry that we took off those mask mandates and these other things, and I really would like to have them back, but I can't do it now. I signed it. I really regret that. Maybe the courts will do it. And, of course, the courts did do it for him. And here's what his constituents said.
People get sick from...
Right. You're lying. We know the truth.
Let's identify.
We know the truth. You're lying.
Would you all like to be...
We know the truth, Governor.
Or would you just like to yell? We're going to be living with people dying if we do not increase our vaccination rates. So I still need to get that message out. And so it sounds like some people want low vaccination rates. Okay.
Yeah, he's so out of touch with them. Isn't that amazing?
Don't give her the mic.
Out by the WHO in October, November.
So explain to me why...
Don't give her the mic.
There are so many that have the vaccine that are getting the virus. I can name...
What's in the vaccine? Give me the insert sheet.
The insert sheet's blank.
If informed consent means you tell me what you put in my body. If Mr. Doctor gives me a vial and says, trust me, I'll give you a vial. You trust me.
Every SARS-2 COVID vaccine that's available on the market is manufactured using aborted fetal tissue.
Governor,
I have been praying that God himself will step in so that Christians are not forced by their employers and a mandate to get the vaccine. Yet, even if God does not, I will not bow. And with all respect, Governor, we love you and appreciate you, but God will not hold you guiltless if you fail to stand up to the Christians who believe it is in their right to abstain from the vaccine.
The numbers, again, are being manipulated to try to force unvaccinated people towards a mandated vaccine. And I know you may not see that now, but it's down the road. Everything that was a conspiracy 6 months ago is now coming to fruition. And 6 months ago, the story's going to be different.
Thank you.
My whole family had COVID. But let me tell you something. All of us took the therapeutics from day one. And if doctors were allowed to tell the truth and treat their patients with these therapeutics, we would not have hospitals full of sick people dying.
It's medically incentivized malpractice.
Don't smirk at me, Governor. You should care.
Don't smirk at me. He's smirking.
On what works? What will save lives?
Isn't that amazing? Well, those people are wide awake in Arkansas. And what is truly amazing is the arrogance of this shill for the establishment. Again, Asa Hutchinson going on this last weekend and all the talking head shows. Oh, yeah, you know, I signed that bill. I'm really sorry. And we need to get the judicial system to throw that out. And they did for him. And then he's smirking at these people. I'm sure that he will not have another one of these meetings because these people came loaded with facts. And we'll talk about the Christian approach to this mandate again because we've had some more come out about that. But when we look at bad governors, what about Greg Abbott? Greg Abbott is now out there asking hospitals to delay elective procedures. Hey, Greg Abbott, you're not a doctor. Stop playing one on TV. Stop virtue signaling to the national press and your globalist controllers. This is a guy who, on day one of getting his power and his money, what did he do? He shoveled off $300 million for contact tracing to a company that both Republicans and Democrats said, who are these people? This guy's got a bogus resume. They got an empty office here. And he has, and we've seen what happened with these elective procedures being shut down. You know, elective procedures like cancer. Oh, that's elective. We're not going to do that. Stop practicing medicine. Stop financially incentivizing medical malpractice, as that one lady said. She said, everybody in my family's had it, and we used cheap and available therapeutics, and if doctors were allowed to do this, you wouldn't have the emergency rooms packed with this. It is financially incentivized malpractice. They're paying them to put leeches on people and mercury in their veins. If you want to go back to George Washington's case, that's what this amounts to. And so, let's start doing just voluntarily. He's going to tell the doctors what to do. I'm so sick and tired of politicians telling doctors what they have to do. The doctors even telling the doctors you're going to have to take the vaccine when the doctors don't want it personally. They're going to take away their licenses if they actually treat people therapeutically. And if they decide that they want to opt out of an experimental vaccine because they thoroughly understand it, then the politicians vilify them and tell them and the people that the bean counters that they work for at the hospital that don't care about anything other than money. And, of course, it's all being driven by the money, the Trump release. They push them into this. And then finally, let's talk about Bill Lee, because I've had a lot of people send me stuff about Bill Lee's Executive Order 83. And let me tell you, this kind of began with Todd Starnes. All the articles that I saw, I had to go back to Ted Starnes. There was a tweet. It looked kind of suspicious because this is several pages, about 10 pages or so of an executive order. And the Tennessee governor, Lee, put up page one of about 10 pages and said, well, this is to expand hospital resources. And then people started looking at it. And as they looked at this executive order, you can hear some of the headlines that people put. Todd Starnes, again, at the center of this on Fox, I think, is where he is. I don't know Todd Starnes. But the headline was, order authorizes the National Guard, quarantines, and involuntary commitment for, quote, certain health care operations. Well, that sounds very alarming, and that is alarming to see stuff like that. You have other people picked up Todd Starnes and ran with it. Executive order authorizes forced quarantines, isolation facilities, involuntary commitment. Telephone assessments for involuntary commitment cases are permitted. I say involuntary commitment. And so, a question mark. Other people say, wow, the guard will be utilized. Involuntary commitment, a construction of quarantine and isolation facilities. I thought all of this was just a silly conspiracy, said one citizen. Well, let me tell you what's not a silly conspiracy, a very dangerous conspiracy. That's why I focused on this last week. The Green Zone thing put out by the CDC, that is very serious. That is a very draconian measure. And it talks about going through stages. And we've been through the first one or two stages already. The later stages are exactly that. They are FEMA camps. And they planned on this last July. They laid this out. And we've seen these further stages being done in Australia, because this is a global agenda. This is not just something cooked up by some idiot at the CDC. This is a global agenda. You see it rolling out now in Australia. So is this something that we should be concerned about? Well, I actually took the time to read the executive order. And if you look at this, it's got a lot of different sections. As a matter of fact, it's got 21 different sections. And if you look at the tweet that he put out, he only showed the first two. So that was a little bit suspicious. But it has things like this. I'll just read you some of the headlines and give you the idea. Number one is out-of-state health care providers can now practice in Tennessee. Retired medical professionals can get back into the health care workforce easily without a lot of bureaucratic obstacles. Practical nursing graduates can practice. Medical professional staffing flexibility is permitted. Behavioral health inpatient psychiatric residential and crisis care staffing flexibility is permitted. You can use healthcare students for staffing. And then you get to something that looks a little bit disturbing here. This is number eight, discretion to utilize the National Guard and State Guard members in connection with certain healthcare and emergency services operations. Personnel can perform authorized diagnostic testing. They can perform authorized nursing and other functions. They can operate public or privately owned ambulances. Those were the sub things there. And so this is starting to go into a pattern. Do you see a pattern here? Flexibility for ambulance support, flexibility for ambulance driver qualifications, designation and payment for certain nursing facilities, Medicaid payments, increasing the number of hospital beds without having to get a certificate of need. So what he's doing is he's getting rid of regulations, which basically I think the entire medical profession is highly overregulated. A good example of this is this whole certificate of need thing. A certificate of need to say that if you're going to add beds to your hospital, you have to get a certificate of need. And again, this goes back to the political lobbying and the alarmist news articles that you saw out of New York 3 years before you had the same articles repeated in 2020. The articles that said, we're putting people in the hallways, we don't have enough beds, and we don't have enough nurses, and on this, on and on. All the same stuff that you heard about in New York last year when it was supposedly the epicenter of the worldwide pandemic. And I went back and found articles 3 years earlier from the same newspapers about exactly the same hospitals, and they were saying that. And why were they doing it then? Well, some of them were state-run hospitals, county-run hospitals. But even if you were a private hospital, you have to get the permission of the government in order to add beds, in order to expand your facilities. So it's not even doing things like getting their permission to add an MRI machine, but you have to get their permission to add beds. Why is that? Well, we know why that is, because in many cases, a private hospital is competing with government-run county hospitals. But it's also to the extent that even the county hospitals, they don't want them just expanding without them looking and making sure that they're going to reduce capacity so they can keep prices high. This is an anti-competitive measure. This is something that forces this is what is driving higher and higher medical care costs. The idea that you would have to have a certificate of need granted from the government so that you could add your capacity. So there's so many things that cause high medical bills. But it's this kind of monopolistic market control that is represented by certificate of need. So basically he's going through and he's taking a lot of this stuff out. Medical laboratory facilities can work at home and going to ease restrictions on who can be hired. Inspection of mental health substance abuse facilities is suspended. So they're not going to they're going to shut down on inspections and on healthcare licensing inspections. And they're going to allow this whole thing about phone assessment for involuntary commitment. That sounds alarming when you look at that. That's number 14. It says, for the emergency involuntary commitment of a person with a mental illness or serious emotional disturbance based on a telephone assessment of such person, following conditions are met, mandatory pre-screening agent is not reasonably able to conduct an evaluation in person or via readily available telehealth services. And the mandatory pre-screening agent determines in the agent's professional judgment that conducting the assessment via telephone with the person is clinically appropriate. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but it is not the sort of thing where they're going to call you up on the phone. Do you have a vaccine? All right, commit them without indefinite detention, without due process. And then perhaps the most controversial one, number 18, temporary quarantine and isolation facilities may be constructed to allow for the construction of temporary structures, the plans for which would otherwise be subject to review for new construction, additions, or substantial alterations. It doesn't construct these, it's just getting rid of some building code red tape. That's my take on this. I think this has been completely blown out of proportion by some of the conservative alternative media, people like Todd Starnes. And I think we need to be careful that we don't overreact, that we don't jump the shark, that we don't use arguments like I said yesterday, the argument that was based on bad statistics saying that 82% of the pregnant women who had been vaccinated had had miscarriages. It's bad, and we don't need to make it worse than it is. We don't need to overstate that. And we need to be careful that we don't lie like the establishment is lying. It's very easy to deconstruct their lies, their statistics, and other things, and we don't need to jump the additional segment there. So you've got a county mayor in one county of Tennessee, in Maury County, and he put out a resolution. Now, this is not to say, again, that the governor's wings should not be clipped, and I said that even about Larry Elder. I said, it's great. He's going to fix all this stuff by executive order. And if he does enough of that, you're going to have them come back and say, we don't want to have the government. We don't want to have government by executive order. See, I don't want to have government by executive order because I don't really believe in the theory of benevolent dictators. But if you want to stop government by executive order, I think the best way to do it is to issue a whole bunch of them and slap them down. But this is what this county mayor of Maury County is saying. Ogles, I think, is his name, O-G-L-E-S. Number one, limit the powers of the governor of Tennessee and his abuse of emergency powers using unconstitutional executive orders, which infringe on the liberties of the citizens of the state. Absolutely agree with that. Protect the children of Tennessee from forced mask wearing and respect the individual choices of parents to manage the health and well-being of their own children. Agree with that. And number three, protect all people of Tennessee from forced vaccination for COVID-19, whether by government or business, both as consumers and employees. You see, these are the three issues, folks. Not the three issues that I started with Bannon. Number one, find out who released that in Wuhan. Well, let's see, that would be the Chinese, right? Number two, go back and look at our stolen election on November 3rd and then see, you know, who is it that set us up on January the 6th? Yeah, look in a mirror, pal. Look in the mirror if you want to know. You want to know who set you up for January the 6th? Look at yourself. Look at Mike Lindell. Look at the Stop the Steal people, Alex Jones and others. That's who set you up. No, the three things that we do to get our country back is to limit these executive powers, to protect children and other people from being forced masked, and to protect everybody from forced vaccination, both as consumers and as employees. And I've got to put a fourth one here. And our ability to travel. These are the issues of our time, not those three that Bannon gave you. When we go back and look at, so I got curious about this. It's like, well, okay, I don't really see any smoking gun in this executive order number 83 by Bill Lee. So let me go back and look at some of these other executive orders. What's this history been? Well, it turns out, this article is not up to date. This is as of October of last year, but it kind of gives you an idea of how things were conducted at the worst of it. During his first 14 months in office, Bill Lee in Tennessee issued 13 executive orders, but from March on, he issued an additional 51 of them, most of them related to the so-called pandemic. He declared a state of emergency a day before Trump did, but that state of emergency was, like we see with this executive order 83, was to lift a lot of laws and regulations that were on private health care providers. It was not a stay-at-home order. And let me just say this, too. The thing that looked legitimate in terms of the concerns about executive order 83 was the fact that there is no emergency. There is no pandemic. So why would he be doing this? I don't see anything and the details of this that raise my suspicion. But the very fact that he would do a very detailed executive order for this stuff looks like he's expecting another fake pandemic. And I'm telling you, I'm expecting it as well. When the weather turns cold, everybody that gets a sniffle is going to be identified as a COVID case. And that's what's dangerous about all this stuff. But so far with this executive order, 83, I just see him clearing the regulatory obstacles as he did on March the 12th. And so that's ominous enough. But then on March the 23rd, a week after, 10 days after Trump released the money, then he did prohibit indoor dining, nursing home visits, closed bars, restaurants, nightclubs, gyms. He did not put a shelter-in-place requirement on people in Tennessee, and they lifted it. That was March the 23rd. They lifted it about a month later, April 22nd, 27th. They allowed restaurants to reopen for indoor dining. Then he had an executive order 3 days later that limited non-emergency medical procedures such as dental procedures. There's no way to defend that. And it should not be defended. It ought to be attacked. Then in masks, early last July, just like Abbott, he did not put on a state mandate like Abbott did. Abbott did that. He got a lot of pushback. So they said, all right, we will allow you to go to church without mandating it. And we'll let you vote without wearing a mask. But everywhere else, you got to wear a mask. Well, in Tennessee, in early July, he allowed local governments to do it, to issue a mask mandate. And then he urged that people to use masks. But basically, he left it up to local governments. That expired on August the 3rd. It didn't go for 9 months like Abbott's mask mandate. And then in July 31st, he allowed high school sports to resume without fee restrictions. July 31st of last year. And in spite of all that, you have, in spite of the fact that he didn't abuse his power nearly to the degree that people like Abbott and Brad Little in Idaho, other Republicans, or Mike DeWine in Ohio, and, of course, all the Democrats. But, you know, take a look at these other Republicans. In spite of the fact that he didn't abuse it to the extent or for the time period that these others did, you have the Tennessee House Republicans are asking him to call a special session now because of the school mask debates that are happening as they're intensifying. And you've seen what has happened at the school boards. I played for you some issues of what were happening. 24 hours after parents went to Williamson County, they spoke out, and the school board didn't care. They voted 7-3 to mask the kids anyway. And this is what this looked like in the wake of that decision. Well, you get the idea. Standing room only. They are angry. They're not putting up with this anymore. You've got now, because of these pushbacks by parents against the school boards, you have the Tennessee legislature saying we need to have a special session to get this stopped. And that is really a good sign, I think. We don't want to have, as I said many times, a benevolent dictator. The power needs to flow from the bottom up. And so your real protection... it's not finding a good governor, because that's a figment of your imagination. All these politicians can be blackmailed or bought off. Are the people going to stand together and let them know that we're not going to stand for this? We're not going to put up with this. That's the key issue. Are there people in your area who will get in their face and say, you're not going to do this to us, you're not going to do it to our kids? That's the guarantee of our freedom. Not having a Republican, not even having a good Republican, because you can talk about the Republicans in Kentucky, Massey and Rand Paul. They're not doing anything to stop this talk about vaccine mandates. They're not putting out any laws to push any of this stuff back. They're not putting out anything to audit the CDC, shut them down. It's not happening. We'll be right back. We'll talk about death Is it going to come to you from the virus, from violence, or from something else? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, let's talk about virus or violence, right? Which one is the greatest threat to you? You know, we have Illinois as a good example. Let's take a look at what is happening in Illinois, what is happening in Chicago in terms of the approaches being taken to this. Illinois is unconcerned as communication and science behind COVID policy slips towards chaos. This is coming from Wire Points. They said the Illinois Department of Public Health took no time at all deciding last week to say that it fully aligns with new masking guidelines issued by the CDC. But things really heated up after the new CDC guidelines were announced and the objections mounted over the failure of the CDC to explain the science behind them. They didn't release any data. Where's your data? Said the press. Can we see the data? Well, we don't have any. You can't see it because we don't have it. We'll have to manufacture it later. We do the policy and then we massage the data to fit the policy. And it's become pretty obvious that that's what's happening. It's pretty obvious that was what was going on for a long time. But now they don't even try to hide it. And people are starting to scratch their heads and say, wait a minute, you know, you told us we got the vaccines, we'd be okay. You know, those vaccines are going to be our ticket back to kind of a normal society. You told us that, you were going to let us do this, and then you changed your tune on all these other things. And so you've got all these people like Trevor Noah saying, wait a minute. You told me I've got the vaccine, I could do what I want. Now you're telling me I still can't do what I want, and I still got to wear a mask? It's like, yeah. But things really heated up after they saw that. So it left Americans confused, said Axios, which, as Wire Points points out, it's pretty liberal, it's pretty establishment. They said this. They said, this has left Americans confused and frustrated, fueling media overreaction and political manipulation. The past year and a half have left Americans cynical about the government's COVID response. And, of course, you know, it was just that it was the CDC in terms of what they were telling people, reversing their positions. And then you had the information that we got last week. I think it was last week. Maybe it's 2 weeks ago now. 74% of the people in Massachusetts, Provincetown, one area where they did it, 74% of the people who tested positive, who got sick or whatever, I think, I don't know if they were cases. They were cases. They weren't people who were sick. But 74% of them were vaccinated. Now, that's a much higher than the proportion of the population. They didn't have 74% of the population vaccinated, but they had 74% of the people of the cases were vaccinated. So in other words, it has a negative efficacy. Now, it's not 90, 92, 94, 94.5% effective. No, it's maybe minus 10%, minus 20% negative efficacy. It actually makes things worse, in other words. So you have the New York Times coming out say, the Delta variant is as contagious as chickenpox, and it may be spread by vaccinated people as easily as the unvaccinated. That's the New York Times saying that. They didn't get a takedown off of Twitter for putting that out. And one guy says, and commenting on it, Ben Wakana, so 3 days ago, the CDC made clear that vaccinated individuals represent a very small amount of transmission occurring around the country, that it was all about the unvaccinated. So it is unreal to not put it in that context. Well, let's put it in context. They're just making this stuff up. And, of course, the lie was the first one that you wanted to be true, and that was that only vaccinated people were pushing this out. And so you see, you know, the case-demic games that they're starting to run again and that they're going to escalate as we get towards cooler weather. But let's just take a comparison. In Illinois, for example, what is happening in terms of people who are getting sick versus people who are getting shot with violence? Yeah, let's not make this about guns. This is really about gangs. It's really about gangs. And it's about how government is operating in Chicago and what they are focused on. And the government that is supposed to, remember now, the government is not there to protect your liberty anymore. Government is there to keep you safe. So how are they doing, according to that yardstick, in Chicago? Well, not very well. Because when you compare the number of people shot versus the number of people who test positive with this garbage PCR test, may not even be sick. They may not. You know if you've been shot. You don't know if you got COVID, right? And let's talk about the people who died from the violence versus the people who died from the virus. So, last weekend, you had 72 people shot and 11 killed last weekend in Chicago, Lori Lightfoot's Chicago. 137 people have been shot and wounded thus far in the month of August, and we're only 13 days in. And actually, this was written on... This is written on the 9th, so they were only 9 days in, and they already had 137 people shot and wounded, and 27 had been shot and killed 8 days in. So you've had 614 people were shot in Chicago during July of this year. 105 of those shooting victims died from their wounds. So what's the answer to this? I mean, do we need strict gun control? Well, they got it. Do they need strict COVID control? Well, they got that too. So how are these two things working out for them? 51, the week before, you had 51 people shot, 8 of them fatally, the previous weekend. So, you know, the first weekend of August, 51 shot, 8 died. The next weekend, 72 shot, 11 died. It looks like we're getting the number of cases is exploding here, gun violence, isn't it? As a matter of fact, 461 shootings reported in July, up 15% from last year. And so far they've had a 139% increase in monthly homicides within the last 2 years. Now let's look at the other side of this. What's going on with the viruses there in Illinois? Well, the same weekend where you had all these people shot, let me get these numbers again. What was it? 72 people shot, 11 killed. You had zero cases, and you had zero deaths from COVID. Huh. So, when you look at violence, you got 72. When you look at the virus, 72 people shot, and you know for sure they were shot. You got zero cases, even with them magnifying it by a trillion times, even looking for people who were asymptomatic and magnifying it. When you look at deaths, you had 11 people die from violence and zero people died from the virus. Imagine if the virus was jumping up by 15%. CNN would be doing special reports. You would have the entire country would be locked down. They'd probably blame it on Sturgis motorcycle rally, you know, super spreader event. They would come up with some justification to shut our lives down really hard. But, of course, it's not happening. We're seeing a massive jump in violence. And remember, going back to last year, we knew from the very beginning of this, we knew they confessed as within the month. We knew right away, but we had people telling putting their medical license. We had a state representative who was elected. He put his medical license on the line, and they tried to come after him. He said, they're telling people don't do autopsy. Just assume. Just do a clinical diagnosis to say what the cause of death was for these people. And they admitted that in Illinois, the Illinois Department of Health, last April 20th, 2020, they said anyone who passes away after testing positive for the virus is included as a death, as a COVID death. So if you were in hospice and you had already been given a few weeks to live, and then you were found to have COVID, that would be counted as a COVID death. It means technically that even if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. And we saw as the year went on, we had people who died in a motorcycle accident, but had tested positive within 29 days. They were listed as a COVID death. And it's not just Illinois. Take a look at New York City. 10 people in New York City last weekend killed in a gang shooting. And again, it's the gangs, it's not the guns. It's the drug war prohibition. And if you do now a gun control prohibition, it's only going to get worse. Because now the gangs will be selling drugs and guns, and they will be making far more lethal versions of the guns, just like they've made more lethal versions of the drugs. It's not going to make anything better. The problem is the gangs. That is the source of the violence. And, of course, these Democrat areas are not doing anything at all about that. 5 wounded in New Orleans in early morning shooting near Bourbon Street, said the police. 6 people injured in 4 shootings overnight, including 1 triple shooting in Milwaukee. And it's the people. It's the demographics. It's the politicians who refuse to lock up criminals and to hold them responsible. But they will lock you up even if you don't test positive. Even if you're asymptomatic, they want to lock you up. Violent criminals, free to roam. But if they can extend their power over you, they will lock you up without any excuse. And we see this with the border. I mean, look at what is happening at the border. Right, we're going to not even allow people to fly in, even with a negative test, but they can only come into this country if they're vaccinated. And yet we allow people across the border, and the Biden administration flies them through the rest of the country. Who are testing positive, who are not vaccinated. It's amazing, isn't it? The double standard and the hypocrisy. I had a listener write a letter. This is from Susan in California, a supporter. She says, so if this doesn't wake up the already angry vaccinated sheeple, then I'm afraid nothing will. And they all thought they were actually going back to normal. People have got to start connecting the dots. She said, in putting the picture together, why would they stop at the schools? Because this article is about Stanford and other universities not only requiring a vaccine, not only requiring a mask for the vaccinated, but also requiring weekly tests for the masked up vaccinated students. Is that not going to wake them up? Probably not. Probably not. Why would they stop at the schools? This is just a faster way to deliver the toxins more frequently. Boosters would take too long. And as I said, you know, if you really want to know what they're talking about with boosters, look at the slang. As in, he boosted my ride. Yeah, these people have boosted our nation. They've stolen our nation. Stolen our nation. And they've done it by boosting us, putting out a load of BS. And they're going to boost your ride as well. That's coming. That's coming. First, they steal the country. First, they lie to you up one side and down the other. And then they're going to actually are going to take your car. They are going to boost your ride. So she said, remember this. And she puts it in like 10-point steps here. 10 steps to where we got today. Yeah, it was just 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Then, sorry, a little bit longer for the lockdown. Then masks are no good. No, they're bad. Now they're required. And now you need 2 masks or better. Open things up, shut things back down, take the vaccine so we can all get back to normal. No more mask required for the vaccinated. The vaccinated are outraged that the unvaccinated can roam freely as well. Then you have the vaccinated cry for vaccine passports. Then you have the deadly Delta variant. Well, no, it's actually the toxic shots, isn't it? What shall we do? Oh, I know. Let's test with a bogus test that the CDC has already said is bogus. It's boosted. And then we can get vaccinated as well. And we can also mask up. And this is what's happening. It's Susan from Sacramento. Thank you, Susan. This is the article coming from the San Francisco Chronicle. Stanford, among the first universities requiring weekly coronavirus testing, even for vaccinated students. You know, I used to kind of think of Stanford as kind of quasi-conservative because they have the Hoover think tank there. But I don't think you've got any universities in California that are conservative. The school had already mandated face masks and vaccines for everybody returning. Princeton, Brown, and Yale will also require weekly coronavirus tests for the vaccinated as well. So, force you to get the vaccine, force you to wear a mask in addition to it, and now force you to have weekly tests. So, where's this all going to go? We had students at the Indiana University challenged and asked for the Supreme Court to hear on an emergency basis yesterday a challenge to vaccine mandates. And we got a very, very bad answer. Not that I'm surprised, because the Supreme Court doesn't care about individual liberty, doesn't care about the Bill of Rights, doesn't care about the Constitution. And who was it? Well, it was Trump's Justice Barrett that shut this thing down. I thought that the reason that you vote for a Republican president was so that you could get conservative judges. Isn't that what we hear? Every election. How'd that work out? Well, it didn't work out for Trump. It didn't work out for George W. It didn't work out for George H.W. It didn't work out for Reagan, and on and on. First of all, they're pulling from a pool of statists, of globalists at Georgetown University, for the most part. And even the ones who are outside of that, they're still going. She came from Notre Dame, which is, you know, Pete Buttigieg's father, who is an avowed Marxist, taught there. It's just the pool that you have to pull people out of, you're not going to get anything any better. Barrett denied this, and there were no dissents from any of the other justices, not Alito, not Clarence Thomas, and certainly not Scalia. He's still got that pillow over his head, I guess. I tell you. You know, when you hear somebody after going there to that place where he was found with a pillow over his head, and I won't go into it because it's kind of hearsay, but the things that we heard about that place and the things that I saw there in terms of the satanic, I've never seen anything like that. The satanic artwork that they had everywhere. And it's like, why is a good conservative Catholic judge, family man that we're all told Scalia was, why is he vacationing by himself at a location like this? Yeah, good question. Can we trust any of these people? Absolutely not. So her denial, and again, there were no dissent. Clarence Thomas, none of these guys said, no, we ought to at least think about whether or not mandate. They're not even going to consider whether you have the right to refuse a vaccine mandate from a corporation, from a university. And this is from the beginning. I told you this. I said, we got to fight Trump on this Operation Warp Speed. We got to fight him with all of our might, because the plan is not for the federal government to mandate it. It is to run this through corporate and school coercion. And for the most part, and you could see, they were openly talking about it. New England Journal of Medicine said, we do not want to mandate this because that will invite due process challenges, and we don't want them. Well, here's a due process challenge, and they just ignore it. Just ignore it. So I guess that clears the way even for the government now to mandate this, because there's no due process challenge is going to be even entertained by the Supreme Court. This is going to be just like the pedo lawyer Dershowitz said, oh yeah, I can drag you down and stick that needle in your arm, no problem whatsoever. Public and private entities are increasingly mandating vaccines in response to this. And of course, the fix is in. The decision is the first significant test for challenges to vaccine mandates. and it's not looking good for liberty or the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. So you had a lower court judge who supported this, and they refused to hear an appeal of his decision. So this is what stands. This is Judge Frank Easterbrook in the Seventh Circuit. Said, each university may decide what is necessary to keep other students safe in a congregate setting. Vaccinations protect not only the vaccinated persons, but also those who come in contact with them. And at a university, close contact is inevitable. So this is why judges shouldn't practice medicine, because he can't even keep up with the rapidly evolving advice from the experts at the CDC, who, as we all know, made it very clear this last week, as I just read again, the fact that, no, the vaccine doesn't keep you from transmitting it. You will transmit it just as much as if you didn't have the vaccine. It will protect you, but it will transmit the vaccine. And actually, say it doesn't protect you either. It does nothing. Actually, it has a negative efficacy. He says, you know, and if people don't want to be vaccinated, they can just go somewhere else. Well, here's the problem. You know, when you invest in a university, people have invested tens of thousands of dollars each year to go to these universities. And I know because when I was in college, I transferred. And when I transferred, they throw away a lot of your stuff. They don't accept it. You know, oh, well, we'll put it in as elective things. But you're going to still have to go through this program and so forth. So whenever you transfer, it is a major step backwards. And so what these universities have done, when people have invested tens of thousands of dollars into this, they've just essentially changed the terms of service unilaterally. And in a sense, they've broken a contract. And that's what these judges should respect. Plus, as I've said many times, when you start pitting individual choices of these businesses against somebody, I thought we settled that when we said, if you've got a public accommodation here, you're not going to be able to pick and choose who comes in. I mean, isn't that, we've had so many different laws about that, whether it's people who are handicapped or discriminating against people because of the color of their skin. We even had people saying, well, you know, you're going to have to bake a custom cake for me. And it's like, well, no, I don't have to make a custom cake for you. I'm not refusing you service in my business. I'll sell you anything that's in my business. Because we had said that if it's a public accommodation, you accommodate the public. If it's a public square, you don't allow people to censor you, even if it is privately owned. But now that's all being thrown out the window. We don't care about that. None of those precedents matter. So, yeah, you know, if you don't like the way you're being censored on social media, just go build your own social media platform, and then we'll shut that down. Or if you don't like the vaccination requirements of this university, just go start your own university. Well, actually, you should just go educate yourself. You'd be better off. A Missouri attorney general actually got it right. He's not a Missouri attorney. He is the Missouri attorney, state attorney general. He was asked by a reporter, what would you say to somebody who says to you, it's a very sane thing to use pressure of someone's fear of losing their jobs to force them to get vaccinated for the good of the community? This is Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, no relation to the Google guy, right? said, if someone says that using fear is good, that is what every tyrant and dictator in the history of the world has ever said, to accumulate, aggregate, and maintain power. This is America, the freest country in the world, and I don't think we should be allowing individual politicians who want to grab power and never let go of it, gain it in the first place. People can make their own decisions. I believe in freedom, I believe in responsibility, but people can make these very important decisions themselves. And I don't want to live in some futuristic, dystopian, biomedical security state. As Attorney General of this state, I'm going to do everything I can to protect the rights of individuals in this state. That is perfect. That is exactly what needs to be said. Good for him. Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt. Get that guy to run for president. And then we have the other side of this. And as I said, when I talked to the pastor who put together the Warrington Declaration And again, I would recommend that you look at warrentondeclaration.com, W-A-R-R-E-N-T-O-N, declaration.com. It is a good statement of the historical understanding and the biblical understanding of legitimate authority. That's part one. Part two is, so what do we do about all these medical mandates? Whether they're masks or whether they're vaccines or whether it's a vaccine ID, what as a Christian do we do with this? And as I said, when I had him on, I said, everywhere you look, you see Christians talking about this because everybody knows that we've just had a seismic shift in our institutions and in authority. And it has shifted away from a legal foundation. Our country has come off of its legal foundation. These are sifting sands right now that we're in. And it's a quicksand situation. And so everybody is talking about this. I wanted to play for you a statement by a guy. And when I get onto YouTube again, I see certain things that are pushed towards me. This is coming from a guy who has a Christian commentary. His name is Todd Friel on YouTube. He's on YouTube. And it's called Wretched. And, of course, he has to stay on YouTube. He has to be very careful. He can't take a stand on any stuff, but he kind of does, and I want you to hear what he has to say. And he will talk about, so what do we do about the V? What do we do about the V? Because he knows that he's playing in that space, and, of course, that's not the way I like to play it. That's why I'm not on YouTube. That's why I'm banned by PayPal and all these other things, because I don't like to prevaricate around the bush. I think we need to tackle these things directly. I think we need to tell people exactly where we stand and what the principles that we see are, and we need to fight it out face-to-face, toe-to-toe. We don't need to dance around this issue because I'm afraid of what, you know, I don't want to step on your toes and I don't want to hurt your feelings and I don't want to get canceled or whatever. No, tell people what you think and stand on your principles. But anyway, here's what he has to say, and I'll comment on this afterwards.
The church historically has basically said, submit to the government, just do what you're told. Now, there are some folks these days that believe in something called the lesser magistrates, that you as a lesser magistrate, you are responsible for making sure that the upper magistrates behave well. If they don't, you can deal with them in whatever way you see fit. I do not adhere to that position. I believe that if the government tells me to put pinwheels on the side of my head every time that I go to Publix, I'm going to put pinwheels on the side of my head.
Okay. Well, here, let's talk about this on a bit-by-bit basis. So he talks a little bit about lesser magistrates. He says he doesn't adhere to that position. But let's understand that whether you are a county judge or whether you are a sheriff or whether you are a governor, or whether you are the president, or whether you are a Supreme Court justice, every single one of those offices I just mentioned are lesser magistrates. Every single one of them. First of all, they're lesser magistrates because they're under Christ. Secondly, they are lesser magistrates because they're under the Constitution. The Constitution is the king of this country. Lex rex was a Latin phrase that the founders of this country used. The law is king. Lex, the law, is king. Rex. It is the rightful king. Every one of these lesser magistrates, whether it is a president or a Supreme Court justice or a mayor, every one of these lesser magistrates swears allegiance to that king, the Constitution, as a condition of office. When they violate that oath, they are no longer, do they have authority. They may have power. I was just talking about what's going on in Chicago. You got gangs that are shooting people left and right. Gangs have power. Our government, from the president to the Supreme Court to the state level, has become nothing other than roving gangs. They have no more authority than a roving gang. Now, if you were in Chicago and you see some gang members and they want to boost your ride, you hand them the keys, right? you got a dozen guys there, heavily armed, and you're going to hand them the key. That doesn't mean they have the authority. I'm not obeying authority when I do that. I'm just trying to navigate through a dangerous fallen world. And when I obey this government, I'm not bowing to their authority. They have none. They have no moral authority. They have no legal authority in anything that they do, if you haven't noticed, by the way. So when I bow to them, I respect them in the same way that I respect drug gangs, the Bloods and the Crips. That's what we have. So first of all, everybody is a lesser magistrate. The question is, are they in rebellion to legitimate authority, or are they following legitimate authority? And that's something that as Christians we need to use our own discernment in. And then the other aspect of this, and I said this for the longest time, I said, you know, always we'd had these discussions for years about where legitimate authority is for Christians. You had some people say, well, Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2 are going, they just tell you, do whatever the government says. Like he said, if they tell me that I've got to put pinwheels on the side of my head to go to the grocery store, I'll put pinwheels on the side of my head. I said for the longest time, if that's your understanding of legitimate authority for Christians in Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2, then you will not stand up when they tell you that you can't worship. And I was proven right last year. Now, we've had a lot of people on the other side of that that have reconsidered that. A lot of people, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty at the beginning of this, especially the, you know, first 2 weeks. And, oh, okay, 2 weeks, let's err on the side of caution. Let's just suspend things. But then when it became orders and it wasn't suggestions anymore, and then when it went on for months and months and months and over a year and so forth, a lot of people are starting to look at this and say, I don't think there was ever anything here. I haven't seen any evidence of a pandemic in my area, and even the government is not making the case for that anymore. So this is simply an effort to make sure that we couldn't do certain things, and one of those things was to have worship service. And I think a key turning point was last July when they were saying in L.A. and other places that you can't sing. You can come as long as you don't have too many of you, as long as you keep masks on, as long as you keep your magic 6 feet distance, which, of course, if it's an airborne virus, 6 feet isn't going to help you. And, of course, the mask isn't going to help you if it's a virus either. A mask isn't going to keep you from getting measles, mumps, rubella, the common cold, or whatever this thing is supposed to be. Doesn't work. Plenty of studies show that. So, but when they said you can't sing, they said, all right, there's no question at all anymore what this is about. And so they pushed back on that. Now you have a different thing, because now a vaccine mandate is not something telling you how you can worship. Now what do we do with this? Now what do we do? Well, do they have the authority to do that? Are they following the Constitution that is there? Like I said, they're all lesser magistrates. And let me just say, if you were in, I don't know, where was it? Was it Liberia or something where you had the Jim Jones town? I mean, he went there. He was the leader. He was the elected leader. Everybody deferred to his authority. And so there is no authority, right, except the authority that's put there by God according to these people's interpretations of Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2. So if Jim Jones is in authority there, and if Jim Jones is in authority, that means that he's put there by God. And no matter how deranged or lunatic, if he tells you you got to put pinwheels on the side of your head, or if he tells you you got to drink the Kool-Aid, you drink the Kool-Aid. And if he tells you you got to put Kool-Aid in your veins, you put Kool-Aid in your veins. Right? Wrong. When you look at Romans 13, when you look at 1 Peter 2, it says that they're God's agents for good. That's what legitimate authority is. They punish evil. They reward good. So he says, so do good. That's what he's talking about. This really kind of goes back, if you look at it, the old debate about, oh, are we saved by grace? Are we saved by certain works? Right? We have the Bible says you're saved by grace through faith. Not of yourselves. It's the gift of God. You're not self-righteous. You're not going to stand before God and say, look at all the good things that I did. And they outweigh the bad things. No, you're either going to be saved by relying completely on Christ, or, and that's a gift, or you'll get the wages of your sin, which is death. So how do we reconcile that when James says that, you show me your faith without works, and I'll show you my faith by my works? I understand this as indicative versus imperative. God is not telling us, you do this, this, and this, and you'll be saved, because you can't do that. You can't obey perfectly. But the fact that you're trying to obey God is an indication that he has saved you. And I say the same thing about Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2. What you're seeing there in terms of the definition of authority is indicative. It's not an imperative being put on you. He's talking about the fact that these people, if they stand for good and punish evil, that is an indication that they are legitimate. And that's why it is legitimate to revolt against these people who are evil. It was legitimate to oppose Hitler. It was legitimate to oppose Stalin, to oppose Mao. It is legitimate to oppose Biden and Trump. Understand that they do not bear the sword in vain, that there will be consequences for that. Just ask Dietrich Bonhoeffer or other people who stood up against that. But it is your duty as a Christian to not obey evil. It is your duty to not engage in cannibal medicine. It is your duty not to destroy your body. It is your duty to resist when people tell you you're going to have a number to buy, sell, or travel. Do you understand where that's headed? Do you understand what that's about? Half of Americans believe vaccine mandates and COVID passports are more important than protecting freedom. This is what we're up against. We're up against the Jonestown cult here. We're the one guy. We're the guy in that Nazi rally where everybody's got their arms raised and Heil Hitler. And he's there like, I can't believe I'm stuck in this crowd, right? A little red circle you always see around that guy's head. They eventually took him out. He did not escape alive. But he refused the Sieg Heil. We are the one person of the Jim Jones cult who is not going to go along with that. I'm not going to be a part of selling the Kool-Aid. I'm not going to be pouring it into people's glasses. I'm not going to be injecting it in people's arms. I'm not going to be encouraging it. I'm not going to be selling it. I'm going to be telling people what is in this, and you better stay away. You better walk away. You better resist this. You better fight. You better do it now, because these handcuffs are getting worse every day that they have put on us. There's no time left. We should have done this 517 days ago. As a matter of fact, we should have done it even before that. I was opposing this before Trump did it. And it's way past this time. You heard one of the ladies there in the Arkansas, talking to Asa Hutchinson. And she said, 6 months ago, this was a conspiracy theory. No, 2 years ago, this was a conspiracy theory. We knew exactly what was happening over a year and a half ago. So this survey finds that 50% of respondents are in favor of requiring proof of a vaccine for any indoor activities like restaurants, gyms, performance, while only 46% oppose the idea. That's the world in which we live in. But let me tell you, science is not determined by a majority vote. Morality is not determined by a majority vote. Your ethics are not determined by the situation you're in. There is a higher standard. We have the Constitution. We have the Bible. We have God. I don't need to have anybody prevaricate around these issues. I know where I stand on this. You better figure out where you stand on it, because you're going to be challenged. And you're going to be challenged very soon. You've probably already been challenged. Many of you are already looking at having your career or your investment in a university just arbitrarily taken away from you overnight. CDC travel advisory. Listen, this is going the other way. CDC travel advisory is putting those who have recovered from COVID on par with the fully vaccinated. In other words, the CDC is now saying if you have natural immunity, that's the same as having a vaccine. Well, actually, it's much better. Much, much better. You don't have little gremlins running around in your MRA gremlins tearing you up and generating spikes everywhere that are accumulating in your organs and messing up your cardiovascular system. You're much better. It's called real immunity. And again, the whole idea of a vaccine was not to put not to put something in your bloodstream that's going to replicate a toxin endlessly. The purpose of a vaccine, in theory, was to train your immune system with something that was dead or inactivated or weakened, so that your immune system would protect you. It was just a training exercise. But this is an assault. This is, if you want to make the comparison to boot camp, this is a live fire exercise. And you've got a Marine drill sergeant up there who is a homicidal maniac, and he's really trying to kill you with those bullets. That's what we're talking about here. That's the analogy. They're not firing the gun over your head, even in a live fire drill. No, they're firing at you. They're trying their best to kill you. They're not training your immune system. They're trying to kill you and your immune system with this. Anyway, the CDC's pulled back and said, if you recovered, if you have natural immunity, we'll count that as a vaccine. Dr. Marty McCary, again, from the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, said, during every month in this pandemic, I've had debates with other public researchers about the effectiveness and durability of natural immunity. He says, I've been told that natural immunity could fall off a cliff, rendering people susceptible to infections. But here we are now, over a year and a half into the clinical experience of observing patients who were infected, and natural immunity is effective and going strong. And that's because with natural immunity, the body develops antibodies to the entire surface of the virus, not just a spike protein construed from a vaccine. And let me just say this. If you're going to discount natural immunity, then the vaccine is never, you can't get, if you don't understand the idea of natural immunity and you discount the immune system, it's meaningless to talk even about a vaccine. And in the UK, again, this is going back in the other direction. UK vaccine passport allows for self-declared exemption. Do you see this? Think about this. That's actually some good news. These people are actually pulling back a little bit, even though the media isn't. Even though the politicians aren't, the CDC realizes that they've jumped the shark. And even the people in the UK realize that they've jumped the shark. Because you've had the CDC come out and say, all right, well, we think that they're good and they protect you and so forth, but they don't keep you from spreading the virus. And then they come out and say, and oh, by the way, if you've had it and you've recovered, your natural immunity is a real thing. And now this is what they're saying in the UK. Even the Gates-funded Telegraph, as a Daily Skeptic puts it, Gates gives money to the Telegraph. They have a global health correspondent, Paul Nucky. And Nucky quotes UCL's professor, Francois Balax, who argues the vaccine's protection against transmission is so poor, they can no longer be deemed to protect others. It's not so much anymore a duty to others to get vaccinated, but a protection for oneself. There won't be any herd immunity wall to hide behind. Exactly what I played yesterday when I played Andrew Pollard, the director of the Oxford Vaccine Group that put together the AstraZeneca thing. He said, we're not going to have herd immunity. If you don't have herd immunity, and if you don't, if the vaccine doesn't change transmissibility, the argument for vaccine passports, for vaccine mandates, goes away. It's totally meaningless. If we were talking about science, if we were talking about medicine, but we're talking about political power. The only reason to have these vaccine mandates, the vaccine passports, is for political power. And I said from the very beginning, don't get hung up on this Wuhan thing, because this is a political virus. What is being modeled for us, the thing that is dangerous is coming out of China, is not anything that you found in a wet market. It's not anything that you found in a biosafety level 4 lab or anything that was released from a biosafety level 4 lab. The dangerous thing that's coming out of China is this political virus where the entire world has become China. It happened in Italy. It happened in America under Trump. That is the thing that you have to be concerned about. And so again, yesterday, Andrew Pollard of the Oxford Vaccine Group, he said mass testing now serves no useful purpose. Testing should be returned to its clinical setting for diagnosing treatable disease. Quote, we don't have anything that will stop transmission. So I think that we're in a situation where herd immunity is not a possibility, and I suspect the virus will throw up a new variant. So I think as we look at the adult population going forward, if we continue to chase community testing, if we're worried about those results, we're going to end up with a situation where we're constantly boosting. These people, they're lying to you. They're stealing from you. That's the kind of boosting they're doing. He says it needs to be moving to clinically driven testing where people are willing to get tested and treated and managed rather than lots of community testing that, by the way, is being forced on people. If someone is unwell, they should be tested. But for their contacts, if they're not unwell, then it makes sense for them to be in school and to be educated. This is a guy who was with the group that created the AstraZeneca vaccine. Currently in the UK, their government guidance page says, if you have a medical reason, which means that you cannot be vaccinated or tested, you may be asked to self-declare your medical exemption. Can we have that same standard at the Pentagon for soldiers? Can they self-declare that they got a medical exemption? No, they're not going to do that, are they? As I said yesterday, they're saying, well, you know, we may consider your medical exemption. We may consider your religious exemption. But then again, you know, we may find a basis on which we say no. Yeah, if you say, I don't want to participate in cannibal medicine because we got two of these vaccines that were manufactured using aborted baby fetal cells, and all four of them used aborted baby cells to develop them. I don't want to participate in that. And they'll say, well, no, that's not anything that's a legitimate concern for a Christian, so we will just throw that out. No, what they're doing in the UK, they're now saying, you can give yourself a medical exemption. The COVID pass page, where they got the little red, yellow, green pass that they're using everywhere in the UK. They're saying, if your customer confirms that they have a self-declared exemption, but is unable to show any evidence, you should allow them access to your venue or to your event. So I just declare myself exempt. What does the passport mean? It doesn't mean anything at all. It's meaningless. The vaccines are meaningless. The vaccine mandates, the vaccine passports, all of this stuff is meaningless now. This is what we need to focus on. That's what we need to focus on. We do not need to get caught up in making, you know, putting Trump back in office. We don't need to get caught up on Executive Order 83. We need to tell people, hey, have you noticed that the national health system in the UK says we're just going to allow you to declare your own self-exemption? Have you noticed that the people who developed the AstraZeneca vaccine said that it doesn't matter in terms of transmission? So we don't need to make that distinction. We don't need to force that on people. Their whole argument has disappeared, and the CDC is saying the same thing. Let's tell people, let's stand right now, for however long they say this, because they'll flip again. But right now, they're saying it doesn't matter for transmission. And even to the extent that, hey, get your vaccine because it works. Well, fine. If you think it works, go ahead and get your vaccine. But I don't have to wear a seatbelt in order to protect you in your car. I don't have to wear a helmet in order to protect you while you're riding your motorcycle. And I don't have to get a vaccine in order to protect you. If your vaccine works, good for you. Country star Jason Isbell had to cancel his show because he was demanding vaccine passports. And the venue said, not going to do it here in Texas. Only fully vaccinated people, however, will be allowed to visit Prince Edward Island, and so you're going to have to show your passport to get in. So it's not going away in these control freak areas like liberal Canada or liberal Philadelphia, where they have new indoor mask mandates and so forth. Or in L.A., where you had the city council vote 13-0 to create vaccination requirements for indoor public spaces such as restaurants, movie theaters, and concert venues. So the real issue here is that they don't have even a phony leg to stand on. And we need to stand on these pronouncements by the CDC, by the NHS, and we need to stop getting distracted by Mike Lindell, Steve Bannon, and other people who are trying to put up alarmist stuff. You should be alarmed. You should have been alarmed 2 years ago about what's happening, even before that. But, I mean, 517 days ago, that was it. I was very alarmed, and you should have been, and we should have been starting pushing back at this. But people realize this is a fraud. People are standing up to this fraud, and even the CDC and the NHS are pulling back off of that. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be joined by Tony Arterburn, and we're going to talk about what has been called in the history books the Nixon shock. The Nixon shock, where he took us off the gold standard. And we'll talk about what happened in the aftermath of that and what is likely going to be happening in the future. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Tell Alexa to add the APS radio skill and have access to the best channels.
I don't hear him either.
From country to blues, classic.
I think I've got you now.
Okay, good. I hear you. Yeah, that's good. We got another
playlist for you to enjoy. Get details
at
APSradio.com.
In recent weeks, the speculators have been waging an all-out war on the American dollar. The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy. And the American economy is by far the strongest in the world. Accordingly, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to defend the dollar against the speculators. I have directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve assets, except in amounts and conditions determined to be in the interest of monetary stability and in the best interest of the United States. Now, what does this action, which is very technical, what does it mean for you? Let me lay to rest the bugaboo of what is called devaluation. If you want to buy a foreign car or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less. But if you are among the overwhelming majority of Americans who buy American-made products in America, your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today. The effect of this action, in other words, will be to stabilize the dollar.
All right, and joining us now is Tony Arterburn, and you can find him at wisewolf.gold. And we're going to talk about, this is 50 years ago today, guys, on a Friday the 13th, August the 13th, 1971. That's what Nixon said at the time. Thank you for joining us, Tony.
That's great to be back, David. You know, I hosted for you, the last time I hosted was Friday the 13th in November of 2020, and then the previous Friday the 13th to that was Trump's executive order. So
yeah.
We're circling around that day, but I'm really happy to be here.
Maybe there is something to Friday the 13th being unlucky, except that I'm happy to have you on and happy to have you guest host for that. Now, you heard what Nixon was saying there. He was telling everybody, you know, we have these outside speculators, and they're doing all kinds of nasty things to us, and it isn't going to really affect us to go off the gold standard. Because, and really at that time, we had 3/4 of the world's gold here in the U.S., and our economy, only 10% of it was imports. Things have really changed. Now we're all imports, we're no gold, and we can look at what's happened to the value of the dollar after all this. I don't think it worked too well, did it?
No, and you, the timeline after that has been disastrous. It accelerated everything. And I would go back to Nixon's statements. He said that he was going to suspend the gold window temporarily.
Oh, yeah.
So he's playing 4D chess. Let's just put it that way. At 50 years, temporarily, we'll see. It might come back. They may reopen the gold window.
Well, that's the problem. All these temporary restrictions that they put on our freedom, these temporary setting aside the Constitution that these people do, they are never temporary, are they? And that's why I said from the very beginning, I said, if we let these people take us, it is going to be hell to get it back.
Well, right. Of course, the Secretary of the Treasury at the time was John Connally, who was riding in the car with Kennedy the day he was murdered.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, they based the magic bullet theory off of Connally. And, of course, this is the magic money tree. this is the theory of the magic money tree and the endless printing. Of course, 1972, David, we opened China. 1973, you get the Trilateral Commission. It's also the last year that we ran a trade surplus in this country. Wages have been in decline and stagnant since then. But the wheels have really come off with the monetary policy, as you and I have done, you know, interviews in the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, really accelerated to the unbelievable proportions under the Trump administration.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I began the show by saying that Trump was saying this $3.5 trillion that Biden is putting in. That's a path to communism. And it's like, oh, your $3.7 trillion that you put in last year is a path to communism. I mean, they're on the same path. Right. They're driving us, you know, left and right are pushing us into communism. And there's not even a difference anymore at the speed at which they drive. It used to always be the same thing. You know, we'd say, well, they're going in the same direction. But the Democrats are going at a faster speed than the Republicans. That's not true anymore. Not true.
Right. It's not true at all. It's a marketing ploy. You know, it's propaganda to believe that the Republican Party is here to help you stave off Marxism. They're just pushing it along and giving it a different brand.
That's
you
right.
You see that before the
they're pandemic. Normalizing it. They're normalizing it. It's kind of a ratcheting effect.
Right. And you see this before the lockdowns, before the scamdemic, before that. The central bank, the Federal Reserve, had pumped about $6 trillion into the repo markets. And you and I discussed that. We were talking about it like the GDP of nations like, you know, South Korea in one day, you know, or one month. And so it would just be the acceleration rate under, you know, 2020 under Trump is really what's pushed us into where even mainstream financial networks that are usually cheerleaders for the stock market are saying, oh, we're really worried about inflation, like really worried. You know, I've been worried about that for a long time, and you're seeing it. You're
yeah,
seeing
it's taken
it
off.
Happen.
It's taken off. We're making the jump to warp speed right now.
Right.
It's like better fasten your seatbelts because it's coming in really, really hard. Before we get into what's coming up, and we know what their agenda is, and let's talk about that. You know, it's really about the it's about having a cashless society, having central bank digital currencies, I believe. But before we get into that, the things that actually that Nixon did with that action, he closed the gold window, as you just heard. And then, of course, he let the dollar float. You know, he's the father of fiat currency, placing a temporary freeze on wages and prices in order to, quote unquote, combat inflation. I wonder if we're going to see that from Biden. And then, of course, he put a 10% tariff on imports to improve the balance of payments. But as you pointed out, subsequently, you know, Nixon, along with Kissinger, who's a real power behind the throne, he was the one who opened up everything to China. But when you look at the presidency of Nixon, I mean, the wage and price controls, taking us off the gold standard, centralizing control of speed limits even, to 55 miles an hour that we had on the interstate system, and then implementing the UN's drug war, because that was a UN program that came up in 1961. He put it in. That's another thing he did in 1971. He just copied it over, put his put the U.S. at the top and signed his name at the bottom and called it his drug war. But it had the four schedules. It had all the drugs that went into each of those schedules. Marijuana, they put that in as schedule number one, which said it had no medical use. That was a lie. And then he created the EPA. He created the Department of Energy. I mean, what a disaster. How in the world does somebody wind up with a tattoo of Nixon on their back? I don't know.
I've got a portrait of Nixon here in the office. My grandfather gave me a book by Richard Nixon before he died called In the Arena. And I thought it was a really interesting book. And I've been not a fan, but I've been someone who has looked into the legacy of Nixon because he's the only president that was made to resign.
Yeah.
So somebody didn't want him there. I've always thought that was interesting history, of course, replaced by Gerald Ford, who was on the Warren Commission, and, of course, the vice president, Rockefeller. So looking at that, I think that's interesting history.
Yeah.
If you go back and you see the decision in 71, David, was based off of the fact that we didn't have the gold, really, to distribute to these countries. We had been running deficits. You know, first you start seeing, just like any empire, they take the silver out of the coinage. This happened in 1965, starting the devaluation of our coin money, our half dollars, quarters, and dimes. And then looking back at 1933, you have Franklin Roosevelt telling everyone to turn in their gold. So the, you know, the old gold pieces, $20, $5, $10 gold pieces, those were mandatory to turn in. So Americans couldn't even own gold. So technically, the American people weren't really on the gold standard throughout the 30s into 1971. It just became official between countries because the United States had, you know, we had the Vietnam War. You had LBJ's Great Society we had to pay for.
Yeah, and they called that
devaluating the currency.
That's right. They called that the guns and butter approach because you had the welfare state, the Great Society, you know, the war on poverty, all that sort of thing from Lyndon Johnson. And then what Nixon did was he continued that, and then he added the war on, you know, Vietnam escalated that. Of course, Johnson had the war on Vietnam as well. But it's, you know, massive welfare state, massive warfare state, warfare and welfare. And that's exactly where we are right now, except now it's on steroids. I mean, you know, look at how many different countries we're at war with. We're having a Vietnam moment again right now with what's going on in Afghanistan. I talked about this a couple of months ago. I said we're moving up to a Saigon moment where everybody's going to have to be helicoptered out. And that's what they're doing. They're helicoptering in thousands of troops right now to helicopter out the Americans at the embassy in Kabul and UK civilians and other government personnel. It's going to be a fire drill to get everybody out of there, just like we saw with Vietnam. We never learn our lessons. Instead, we not only repeat the lessons, but we double and triple down, or even more so, on all of these problems in terms of the welfare state and the warfare state.
Right, and everything accelerates. Once you completely untether from the gold standard, which this country was founded on a gold and silver bimetal standard, only Congress could coin money, and it had to be gold and silver. The founders were very wise and knew that if you didn't have accountability at a certain level, if you had no accountability at all, if you had fiat currency, you're going to have the reality that we have today, which is a complete tyranny. It's a financial tyranny state propped up by the bankster class and this international order. And look, that's why I wanted to talk about the central banks printing so much money. That was unheard of in the 1970s. Yeah. And look at the demographic changes in our leadership. You know, the financial sector that was unheard of in the 1970s. I mean, all these financial products and all these things that came out afterwards, these were geared to put the American people into perpetual stock market casino gamble. And that's where you see that industry took off, and it bought the congressmen. It bought the politicians. This was in 1970. Congress had about 70-75% of the Congress was made up of U.S. Military veterans. Today, it's about like 17% because most of these people are handpicked from the elite class. It takes about $2 million to run for Congress. You ran for Congress. I ran for Congress. We know how much money poured into these congressional districts.
Yeah, I didn't spend anywhere close to $2 million.
Well, I didn't either, and that's why I didn't win.
Well, we didn't win. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So, I didn't spend close to $2,000. I printed up some signs and went around with my family, sticking them in yards and public places, not in yards, but in public places. As right. Karen drove, I would hop out, and the kids were in car seats. But anyway, yeah, I know how that works.
That's the reality that's created by fiat currency is a degraded civilization, and I think we're reaching an end game of the U.S. dollar. It's not going to be tomorrow, but you can't keep propping this up by just printing more of them. There's no fiscal sanity anymore. Everything's off the cliff. I mean, they talk about things in the stimulus bill, or not stimulus, the infrastructure bill. We're going to tax crypto, $28 billion, which is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
That's a punishment tax, has nothing to do with revenue.
That's right.
So, no, everything tracks back to it, Dave. That's why this date's important. Nixon is actually Sunday the 15th. Nixon interrupted a broadcast of Bonanza. Now,
he should be impeached for that. I mean, there's absolutely no excuse for that. That's probably what happened to him, Tony.
Well, that was right. It was the Bonanza fiasco. No, yeah. Well, he interrupted the broadcast of Bonanza, and of course that show was based off of a big rush to go find gold and silver in Nevada.
That's right.
You know, which was I thought that was ironic. You know, so
yeah, I think we know who was behind the grassy knoll. Now it was Adam Cartwright. They grabbed Nixon, but you know, tie him up to a horse and run him through the. Through the cactus field or something. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. We definitely can see the effects of fiat currency and the damage that it's done. But the good news that came out of this, after 1971, of course, Nixon driven from office in 1974, Ford takes over. And look, Gerald Ford, Warren Commission member, whatever you want to say about him, he overturned Franklin Roosevelt's executive order making it illegal for Americans to own gold. So I can't believe the Supreme Court didn't stop him. I mean, I thought that the presidents couldn't overturn previous presidents' executive orders.
That's right, yeah.
So we found that out under Trump. But no, he overturned it and made gold illegal or to own. And mm-hmm. Most people don't even realize that. You couldn't even own, like, couldn't have a Krugerrand, couldn't have a gold eagle. So this is where we can have our own gold and silver standard.
Yeah.
I mean, the dollar is never going to be tied to gold again, regardless of what QAnon devotees will tell you. I had people come in my shop telling me I have a good authority that we're going to, you know, Trump took over the Treasury and he's still running it from Mar-a-Lago, and there's going to be a gold standard. And I just, can have your own.
We heard last year that, you know, Trump is in danger of assassination. Alex was red alert. Because he's taken over the Federal Reserve with the Department of Justice, and it's like, no.
No, that's not happening. The Treasury and the Fed are the same thing now.
That's right.
I mean, there used to be some arm's length separation, but now you have Janet Yellen. I mean, it's all one entity.
That's right.
And really, they're just stewards of getting this thing to the bottom. I mean, they're just trying to get it to a soft landing, and then I think the replacement will be the central bank digital currency, David.
That's right. That's right. And so going back, you know, before we had, and a lot of people call that, I guess, Bretton Woods 2 or whatever, where you did right. The shock. I don't know if that's, but the real Bretton Woods that happened right after World War II, they had a conference with 40-some-odd nations, and what they agreed they would do was fix the price of gold. Since the U.S. owned 3/4 of the world's gold, they fixed the price of gold at $35 an ounce.
Right.
And but the problem was that you had the Federal Reserve and you had these warfare welfare programs that were creating more and more spending, and they had basically disconnected, even though everybody else was fixing the value of the dollar by gold, they had broken that connection with their spending. And so all these other countries are saying, wait a minute, you violated this agreement. And so in a sense, it was done in a sense from external pressure, because people realized that the dollar was already a fiat currency. It already was fraudulent. And so the markets were starting to put that in. That's what Nixon was complaining about. He said, hey, these people are trading on this stuff and pushing it around, and look, we're having these movements. Well, it was because the market was reacting to what was already a lie and had been a long-term lie in the U.S. And so that's why he did that. And so then what they did at this point was they created the petrodollar, and they essentially worked with the Saudis, put them in the catbird seat, if you will, with a lot of what is happening with our economy, saying that if you buy up our fiat currency, we'll sell you weapons and all sorts of other things. And so that created the petrodollar. Now what we're looking at, as you just pointed out, we're looking at going to a central bank digital currency. And this is something that's being talked about by China, being talked about by the European Central Bank, by the Federal Reserve, all of them. That's what they're pushing for. So talk to us about the implications that will have for us.
Well, sure. I'll speak to that, but I will tell you, watch what they do and not so much what they say.
Right now,
all the central banks around the world are buying gold at the record pace. As a matter of fact, the record after Bretton Woods in 1944, the highest amount of gold ordered by countries and central banks was in 2018 at like 650 tons. We're already surpassing that this year. It's already at 333 tons, and that was as of June. Mm-hmm. So we're going to break the all-time record. Central banks around the world are buying gold. They're going to talk about the central bank digital currencies because that way they can expand and contract the money supply in real time. They can also censor you. They can put expiration dates on the currency.
That's right.
If you look at right now, the petrodollar, the U.S. dollar, 65% of all the paper currency ever printed is outside of the continental United States. 80% of all the $100 bills are outside of the United States. They would do, I think, just about anything to get control of that money supply, who's spending it and how. It gives them a lot more leverage. That's why I think it's really a race to the bottom with what they're doing and printing the dollar, and the Fed as it stands will change, and that will become the digital wallet, digital system. However, David, the central banks and the governments are buying gold.
Mm-hmm.
They don't believe in fiat currency. They know that it's a scam. They know what it's doing is devalue. Every day that they get up and print more or hit the key to make more units, they devalue it. They know that.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't want the public to know. That's just why the clown show of last week, gold had a flash crash based off of the jobs numbers. And the jobs numbers were, hey, we have excess jobs. Well, yeah, you have excess. People aren't working because they're getting the UBI.
That's right.
And but they sold it, and the financial network sold it like, look, happy times are here again. We're going to go get back into the stock market, which is such a scam. And so I'm looking at, I was hosting your show on August 6th when gold hit its all-time high last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it got close to like 2050. Right mm-hmm. now it's trading under $1,800 an ounce. There's a push by central banks to keep the price low because
right.
they're buying it. Same mm-hmm. thing with silver. They're buying it. We can have our own gold and silver standard. I think that the digital currencies are inevitable. I mean, they're gonna push them. They're gonna make them. They're already targeting the actual real digital currencies like Bitcoin through these. You know, it's just the beginning of the censorship and the war on things like cryptocurrency, things like Bitcoin through the infrastructure bill. That's just beginning. But you see, the central banks are buying the gold, and then they're pushing the digital currency. Because, remember the golden rule, David. He who has the gold makes the rules.
That's right. And because, when we look at a fiat monetary system, it's based on trust. It's based on confidence because it's a con game. And so what you're seeing here is that all these banks and other investors and people who are in the know, they understand they don't have any confidence in this. That's why you're seeing these types of actions being made. You know, I saw, Tony, when I looked at what people said 10 years ago when it was the 40th anniversary of the Nixon shock. This is what Forbes said. They said, today the dollar is worth less than 2 dimes in purchasing power compared to the pre-Nixon dollar. Well, that would be 20 cents on the dollar. Here we are 10 years later, and it's worth 1.9 cents based on the current price today, which was, just like you said, just under $1,800 an ounce. I guess we could say that's my 2 cents worth. that's what this thing is worth. It's worth 2 cents. Your dollar's worth 2 cents, even compared to Nixon's time 50 years ago when it was worth 20 cents on the dollar, where it had originally been before they started messing with it with the Federal Reserve. And so when we look at the moves going towards crypto, again, you had the efforts to try to push back. It was put in the infrastructure bill to put a tax on crypto. As you pointed out, it's just a punishment tax. It doesn't have anything to do with fiscal responsibility. When you're looking at a bill that is $3.5 trillion and you're talking about a $28-30 billion tax, they presume they're going to get on that. So it has absolutely nothing to do with that. It's a punishment tax. And we've been seeing governments, especially China, reported last week how the one of the largest, maybe the largest, of the Bitcoin miners in China, this is about, he accounted with his one operation there in China, it was massive. He accounted for about 10% of the Bitcoins that were being mined before they shut him down. And they just came in and just like that, shut the whole thing down. And they're not going to be able to hide because they can find you based on your power profile. So we're starting to see actions like that taken. I know you also, besides gold and silver, you also sell Bitcoin at wisewolf.gold. What is your take on that? How is that? Because we've got the back and forth. We know that they're going to try to shut this down. We know they're going to try to establish their central bank digital cash. What is your feel on how we're going to be able to weather that for other cryptos?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for your service to all of your listeners, because whether you know it or not, you're now veterans. You've all been scripted into a war, because there's a war on all humanity, all of us.
That's
this
right.
is the monetary system war and the complete takeover of humanity through the technocracy. The,
That's right.
the war on Bitcoin, and regardless of what we can find out about its origin, I know something by its enemies. And the central banks, the World Bank, the IMF, they hate Bitcoin. They're punishing El Salvador for adopting it as legal tender. Places like China, they got its use out of it. You know, they said that we're open for business, all the rest. And I think they're priming their citizens for a digital currency. They used Bitcoin for a while and then got rid of it. This war is ongoing, and you're going to see places like El Salvador, South America pop up, where there's going to be more mining, more acceptance, and I think that's great. That's why I love national sovereignty and borders. I think it's important. You got to have a place to flee to. This is something that we're in the opening round. I don't think that that Bitcoin's going away in the near term, but we have to be careful. I mean, I think that they're in order for them to have complete supremacy of the digital realm, they're going to have to kill Bitcoin.
Yeah,
completely.
Yeah,
and they're going to have to regulate it into oblivion. Just like I was talking to my co-host on my podcast for the Wise Wolf Golden Crypto Show. We were uncertain whether or not a transaction between peers is taxable, because mm-hmm. used to it just only if you go through an exchange. But they're making it so convoluted, and this is all the thousand cuts to make it to try to kill it.
And it begins with registration, just like it does with guns or anything else. First, they say, "Well, we just want to." We'd just like to know a little bit about you for our files, Mrs. Robinson. We'd like to know, where this is coming and where it's going, and then they come after you with a hammer.
Right, and that's why it's so important for all your listeners and the people that I talk to, do your research, look into the monetary system, look into the fiat currency scam. Don't hang your future on it, because mm-hmm. it's something that's so manipulated. The hidden tax of inflation is real. It's biting us all right now. You can go to the grocery store and see it, you buy lumber. Or buy a used car. It's all there. It's built in. So, have your own gold and silver standard and get to know things like Bitcoin.
That's
right. I don't think it's going away, but I do think we've got a bumpy road ahead.
And I think, I think a wise wolf would say that you want to hedge your bets and you want to diversify into various things. And so that means, gold and Bitcoin are somewhat complementary to each other. We don't know exactly what the future holds, and so it's a good idea to hold a little bit of each. You're talking about inflation, Tony. Wholesale prices, even as they measure them, and of course we know that they exclude certain very important things deliberately to make it look better. That's why I said from the very beginning of this, you want to talk to me about the numbers? Well, I know how these guys have manipulated unemployment statistics. I know how they've manipulated inflation statistics and so forth. And so even with their manipulated numbers, we're seeing wholesale prices jumping 7.8%, the biggest surge on record, as steel jumps 23%. And to compare this back to, again, 1971, when Nixon did this, inflation for that year was 4.4%. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. They were calculating the inflation a lot more honestly back then. I think this has excluded a lot of things. Used cars were part of it because they had not foreseen a massive surge and use cars. And so that helped to bring a little bit of honesty to the numbers. They'll probably move to take those things out as well. But again, when we look at this, and that's a key part of it, gold as well as Bitcoin and silver, those are things that many of us would look at as a hedge against inflation. The investors are piling into the stock market as a hedge against inflation. But to me, that's just too much of a casino, the way I look at it.
Well, in 1971, companies and corporations were based off earnings, in the Ayn Rand sense of it's all profit-driven. Mm-hmm. Well, as you've spoken about many times, these big corporations just figured out it's easier just to get with the government. They don't have to serve customers anymore as long as they're the favored one.
That's right.
So that's the economy we have now. That in 1981, R. Buckminster Fuller wrote a book called Grunch of Giants, which stands for Gross Universal Cash Heist. And if you look at the 1970s, inflation started to really creep up after we were untethered from gold. Inflation started to explode. So you had the chairman of the Fed, Paul Volcker, at the time, under the Carter administration raised interest rates into the teens. You know this. You know, you're trying to buy a house in 1980, it's like a 13-14% interest rate or higher.
That's exactly what I paid. I had a we got out and we bought a house because both of us are working, and fixed interest rate of 13%. It kept you from buying very much of a house. That was 1980.
Right. And so that was the 1970s. But, David, they'll never do that again. They'll never have – I mean, they had to have – there was pain involved in that. They had to be responsible and get inflation under control. They'll never do that again. They can't. The entire economy is based off of the fake fiat. And they got to keep pumping the monopoly money through it in order for it to even stay somewhat alive. I mean, and I look out the window of my shop. I see cars on the road. I'm like, a lot of this is only due to the fact that the central banks are pumping money into this economy. Yeah. I mean, because they killed small business under the lockdowns.
That's right.
You know, the supply chain has been severely strained. Inflation has hit us. Any sane economy would already start dealing with, you know, the fallout from this. But we just keep printing money. So that I'm preparing by, I tell people, I don't give investment advice, because when you talk about is buying gold or silver going to make me money? I say gold and silver are money. And what you have is not money.
That's right.
So I don't know if you're going to be rich, or I don't give investment advice. I just say, look, I think if you're working, have something to show for your work. If you're holding on to fiat currency, you're already losing. You know, Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, said it best. If you're a saver, you're a loser.
That's right. Because you look at the other thing that happened in the wake of all that massive inflation, because the interest rates got so high, they got rid of the usury laws. It used to be illegal to charge more than 10%. Now, this is another, before we had the massive freedom issues that presented themselves in the last year, I kept saying, you know, hey, if there's somebody out there that wants to transcend the Republican, Democrat demographics, talk about the usury laws in terms of the bankers. Because now you've got a situation where they pay you less than 1%, but they can charge you 25, 30% or whatever it goes up to with the credit cards. It's absolutely outrageous what is happening, especially when you look at the spread. Prior to removing the usury laws, you wouldn't have a spread but just a few points between what they would pay savers and what they would charge borrowers. But now you look at the spread, and these people are running nothing other than a loan shark business. It's absolutely criminal.
Well, there's a reason that Andrew Jackson called them a den of vipers and thieves.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and he said, I'm going to rout you out. And he killed the Second Bank of the United States. He wanted that on his tombstone, David. He said, I killed the bank on his tombstone, because that's how much he hated the bankers. Mm-hmm. You know,
they nearly killed him, too.
That's exactly right. And you fast forward to 1913. And, you know, we get the Federal Reserve, and look, it just slowly working its tentacles, devaluing the dollar, pushing us into foreign wars, bloating the welfare state, all of the things that we talk about.
That's right.
The New World Order, the deep state. You know, you can't have Donald Rumsfeld go in front of the press and say, hey, we can't track $2.3 trillion on September 10th, 2001, and we're going to look for it, and it's right over there in these accounting offices, on, you know, the next day, and something hit the Pentagon, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. Didn't see any plane parts there until after people had already taken pictures showing those plane parts, but yeah,
right.
Went right into that window right there.
But you can't have that world if you're tethered, if you're tied to a metallic standard, because you have to account for it eventually. You can't lose money like you're a rock star and you left a briefcase full of cash somewhere. You can't do that. And that's what our government's done. And now we're at a point where, you know, the 1970s, you could raise interest rates. They're not going to do that, David.
The reason we had gold and silver put into the Constitution was because the people that wrote the Constitution had gone to the expensive school of experience, and they knew what it was like to have a fiat currency. The expression "not worth a continental" was talking about the fiat dollar that they had at the time that was worthless. And so they tried to bind them down with something that was objective like that. And that's, you know, the basic idea behind these cryptocurrencies as well. But as you point out, it really is, all this change is really being driven by the banks. Catherine Austin Fitz has pointed that out many, many times. It is, if you get right down to the root of it all goes back to the bankers. And we saw this, as you pointed out earlier, Tony, we saw this in the run-up to all this stuff back in the fall of 2019, the massive amounts of money that were being poured into this market that most of us had never even heard of, knew exist, called the repo market. They had already been pouring money in since the the housing crisis in 2008-2009, and so they're creating this mountain, this gigantic bubble economy, and we all know that they're just going to pivot over to the cryptocurrency, the central bank cryptocurrencies, because it does a lot of different things. It wipes out this stuff, just like Nixon's moves 50 years ago. It gives them the opportunity to very quickly go to kind of a global economy. It gives them a universal ID and a way to track every single transaction, a way to control even more so everything that we do. As you pointed out, you know, time limitation on the Chinese are talking about that on their digital yuan, that they would give you money and you'd have to spend it within a certain amount of time. So they just basically wipe out any ability to save anything. But the Europeans are talking about how they could control where you could spend the money. So you had to only shop at essential businesses that are partnered with them. And also control what you can buy with it. And we know also that it's going to be who is going to be able to buy stuff, because we've seen how PayPal is rolling this stuff out and rolling out the censorship. We just had Nick Fuentes had essentially a civil asset forfeiture done on his bank account by the FBI, ostensibly because of January 6th, even though he didn't get into the building or anything. So when we look at this, it is a worldwide tyranny, as you pointed out, a war. And it's going to be coming at us from the financial angle. And that's why I think it's very important for people to take a look at other ways to store their wealth, such as gold and cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin.
Well, that's right. And there's a reason why our Lord and Savior, for the one time he showed wrath and took out his whip, he went after the money changers.
Yeah.
You know, in the temple and threw the money changers out of the temple. There's a reason why.
That's right.
It's the root of all the evil. It's the love of money, the lust for it.
That's right.
So as we see the society being rolled out, the control mechanisms, the technocracy, all the things that are being implemented, it all tracks back to that. And as we set up our parallel society, as you talk about, I think it's important for people to educate themselves on how to use gold and silver, how to use cryptocurrencies, things that are not tied to the central bank, things that are not tied to the international order of things.
That's right. We're going to need to have a parallel. We're going to have an underground society. I think we saw during the Depression, and there's still some museums around that have the printing presses where we had some communities were doing their own currency. They were, in some cases, they were making like wooden coins and things like that in order to facilitate exchange. But, you know, there's no substitute for the real stuff.
Well, I think also if we could get Travis to, in real time, whenever you say PayPal, bleep it out.
Yeah,
that would be
right.
Because these are another example. You know, that's a great example of how you can be censored by a bank.
Yeah,
you know, for your speech, for your belief, whether you're a Christian, conservative, whatever, if you're anti-war, anti-state, you're going to be censored by these mega corporations tied to the finance industry, and you should do everything you can to create your own standard.
That's right.
And physical metals are a great way to start. You know, and also, you know, cryptocurrencies that I think are. I'll give you this: Bitcoin, Monero, Pirate Chain. These are things to look into and educate yourself on. I'll say that as much about cryptocurrency.
That's good. You mentioned Monero and Pirate Chain because those are two cryptocurrencies that do not create a blockchain of custody and
right.
Follow people. So that's good. Do you facilitate selling those as well, or are you just on Bitcoin and gold and silver?
So I have some Bitcoin ATMs, David, and you can come to the shop, you can buy Bitcoin. If you come to the shop and you want to know about how to own Monero and Pirate Chain, I can help you do that. I mean, I won't charge you a fee. If somebody wants to call me and ask me how to do that, I can put them on some websites. I currently don't offer them, but I can help people get them. I will say I will accept them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for payment, if you want to buy metals from me, we can work that out as well.
That's great. And you're in Branson, Missouri, is where your shop is. And
right.
People can find you on the internet at wisewolf.gold. And
wisewolf.
Of course,
it's
not just gold, but it's also silver. And as we've discussed in the past when I've talked to you, silver, because of the lower value, if you're going to talk about an underground economy, a parallel economy, that is something that's going to facilitate your being able to make exchanges with people, because typically you're not going to be buying $2,000 worth of something at a place. At a clip or whatever, you know, whatever the purchasing, regular purchasing price is. Thank you so much for joining us, Tony. Fascinating discussion of the 50th anniversary of a major reset of our economy and what is going to be coming up in the future. Thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you, David. Donate to this man. He's an American treasure.
Thank you. And thank you for your support. Tony is a supporter of the program as well. So support wisewolf.gold. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Sometimes your day needs a little smoothing. Check out the Jazz Channel at APSradio.com and the APS Radio app and leave the stress behind.
All right. While we're in the 60s and 70s, let's go back to the recycling of Vietnam. We have the Jim Crow laws and segregation coming back. We have the resetting of our currency coming back. And, of course, we have the lessons that we never seem to learn about foreign wars coming back to haunt us as well. Let's hope that the Pentagon and people like Mike Pompeo are not successful in making a case to, well, let's go back and do it right this time. We've had 20 years to do this. It was based on a lie. It was based on a more dangerous, more obvious even lie than the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, as I pointed out yesterday. Military personnel from the UK are now being sent to help evacuate UK nationals, Afghan staff, and interpreters. Now, the way this was put out by the BBC, they did not say evacuate. They said to help relocate. They're evacuating it. It is estimated that about 4,000 British citizens are still in the country, and so they're trying to get them out safely. The U.S. is deploying 3,000 troops to help evacuate, CNBC got it right, Afghan embassy staff as the Taliban is advancing. And, of course, you know, they're now closing in on Kabul. They have, over the last couple of days, taken over, without much resistance at all, the second and third largest cities. They went to took over Kandahar. And took that over. So now what remains is the capital of Kabul. And that's where the embassy is, and that's where so many others are. That's why the U.S. is sending troops in, the U.K. is sending troops in. They've been feeding us a load of Kabul about this war for the last 20 years. Now Biden is still selling us Kabul about it. He says, look, we spent over $1 trillion over 20 years. We trained and we equipped with modern equipment over 300,000 Afghan forces. So they can take care of themselves. Are they doing that? How's that working out for us now? How did all that money, how did all that blood shed on both sides of this? How about all the people who are permanently disabled, Americans, citizens, over this lie about, you know, people from the caves, the Taliban from the caves and Al-Qaeda from the caves? Got these planes and flew them at an altitude and a speed that the pilots who flew these things for decades and who instructed other people said, you can't fly them that low that fast because of the density of the air. How did they manage to take down three skyscrapers with just two planes like that, just collapsing into their footprint in no time at all? That was the basis of this war. That was the basis of the Patriot Act, the Department of Homeland Security, this massive militarization and destruction of the Constitution, and partnering with that, the other shoe to drop didn't drop for another 20 years, and that's what happened to us last year. The Dark Winter simulation, the false flag with the anthrax attack, and then the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act that was pushed out to the states 2 months after that. That's what they practiced on for 20 simulations. Well, for 20 years. They had more than that. And that's what they rolled out on us last year. The UN says at least 1,000 civilians have been killed in the last month. The CBS News is telling us, if we can believe anything they say, the Taliban may be executing Afghan troops who surrender. I don't really have a hard time believing that. I think they're perfectly capable of doing that. So as they've taken Kandahar, Herat, and a major Afghanistan offensive, the Taliban captured two major Afghan cities, the third largest after Kabul, a strategic provincial capital on Thursday, further squeezing the embattled government just weeks before the end of the American military mission in Afghanistan. Maybe if Biden was wise, he would have gotten out by the date that Trump had set. He thought he would just extend it to 9/11 because he thought he could. They don't have the ability to control that. And it was pointed out a couple of years ago by Rand Paul that there is no military option in Afghanistan. We're not going to be able to win this. Some of the military would say they could, but of course it was not realistic assessment. They knew that could not happen, but they stayed nevertheless. And when Trump said, well, I think we ought to get out, Pompeo said, well, he says things like this, and then we meet with him privately, and we explain to him how things are. You want to talk about somebody completely controlled? It's Trump. Your real government, Americans, is not the presidency. That's why the fight over this election is a misdirection, because the real power is the military-industrial complex and the surveillance state. It's the CIA, the NSA, and the people that they're partnered with. That's the real power. These other people are just window dressing. Trump had about as much to do with what's going on as Biden does right now. They're just a couple of bumbling idiots that people line up and follow behind. Seizure of Kandahar and Herat make the biggest prizes yet for the Taliban, who have taken 12 of Afghanistan's 34 provincial capitals as part of a week-long blitz. And, of course, they already controlled, 2 years ago, when Rand Paul was talking about it, they already controlled everything in the country except for the major cities. And now, in the last week or so, they've taken most of the major cities. So when we go back to 9/11, we now have, as we're coming up to the anniversary of 9/11, the 20th anniversary of 9/11, we have families who are very upset with Biden. They do not want him attending unless he is going to release some information about what happened. So they said, family members of the 9/11 victims have warned Joe Biden to stay away from the upcoming 20th anniversary memorial events unless officials are willing to declassify documents that the relatives believe will prove the Saudi Arabian government was involved in the attacks. I don't think this is going to happen. It didn't happen under Trump. And you look at the people around Trump, you look at people like Rudy Giuliani, who was at the center of the cover-up. We had people die because of Rudy Giuliani's cover-up, still dying because of Rudy Giuliani's cover-up, sending them in to destroy the evidence, even when it was not safe. And so when you look at all of this, when you understand that Trump said the day that it happened, I don't know how that looked like a controlled demolition. You don't just have buildings fall like that. And that's one of the strongest buildings I've ever seen. It was steel on the exoskeleton and so forth. He knew. And that's why there was some hope that being an outsider, being a maverick, he might release some of this information. And it just shows how controlled Trump was by the NSA, by the CIA, by these people who are their spokespersons, people like Bochynek and other people like that. It just shows how controlled he is by the CIA, the Mossad, the rest of these people, that he wouldn't release any of this stuff. And Trump and Biden is not going to release it either. And when you get it released, guess what? It ain't going to be the Saudi Arabian government, except to the extent that they cooperate with the CIA and Mossad. Oh, they're supposed to all be enemies, right? Yeah, just like the Democrats and Republicans are. They do hate each other. They do compete against each other. But they have a common goal, don't they? There is simply no reason, in an open letter they wrote, unmerited claims of national security or otherwise, to keep this information secret. Well, you know, we still have the Kennedy assassination stuff classified and so forth, so don't expect to see anything happening with that. And then we have this absolute moron.
I'm an expert on how to build a bicep. And so therefore,
muscle head.
I know exactly what I'm talking about. I've studied this issue. I know exactly how to create this peak and all this stuff. There's no one that knows more about a bicep than I do, because I studied this issue for 50 years. And the same is also with the virus. There are people out there that are experts that study this year after year after year, and that are experienced, like Dr. Fauci, that has been in this, probably for his entire life. I mean, why would you not believe someone like that? So, and there's so many other scientists out there and experts on this subject. So I believe them and I follow them very carefully. And of course, sometimes things are happening that are unexpected. So then you have to make the adjustments and all that. But I think people should know there is a virus here. It kills people. And the only way we prevent it is to get vaccinated, to wear masks, to do social distancing, washing your hands all the time, and not just to think about, well, my freedom is being kind of disturbed here. No, screw your freedom.
Yeah, very, put very well. That's exactly Schwartz-a-Nazi, telling us, screw your freedom. This is a guy who is a literal Nazi, just like Klaus Schwab. Screw your freedom. You need to listen to the experts. You know, he's a musclehead expert. He knows how to build the bicep, pump you up. So you listen to me, right? And so, you know, he's the expert. And, Fauci has been, he's an expert as well. He's been lying to people since he's a little kid in his cradle. He's been practicing his lies. At what point does Fauci have to show the data, or the CDC show their data, or whatever, be held accountable? Well, never, quite frankly, never. They can say whatever they wish to people and never be held accountable for any of this. So this is the world in which we live. We are just going to move along based on people who are authorities on science, and forget about the people who are authorities on liberty and on human nature. Don't listen to them whatsoever. And if you want to know what this looks like, when we take the attitude, well, screw your freedom, right? Well, take a look at Australia. The capital of Australia, Canberra, is being plunged into a lockdown for an entire week because of a single COVID test case, a single positive result, and they're being locked down for an entire week. Isn't that amazing? This is a town of 460,000 people. The last time they had a positive test was July 10th of last year. So they've gone for 13 months without a single positive test. Keep testing, everybody. Test, 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 test. They finally get one. It was like Ghostbusters. We got one. Lock them down. And they call out the ambulance, and they lock down the entire town for a week because of a single case out of a city of 460,000 people. Haven't had a case in 13 months. And so people will not be allowed to leave their homes for non-essential reasons past 5 p.m. That's a Nazi power trip, isn't it? That's a screw your freedom power trip, isn't it? Because, you know, you can't get sick before 5 o'clock, right? It's okay to be out there prior to, 5 o'clock. It's safe to be out there, but not after 5 o'clock. After 5 o'clock, you're all going to die. No, the reality is that this is nothing other than just Schwarzenegger, Nazi-style tyranny and control. Canberra joins Sydney, Melbourne, and several cities in New South Wales. Again, no threat to anyone, no risk to anyone, but they just continue to double this down. The Australian capital, a seven-day hard lockdown. Again, what they had to say about this is just absolutely incredible. This is by far the most serious public health risk the ACT has faced in the past 12 months. That's why the ACT is entering a strict lockdown in response to this positive case. One person. This is why Fauci has, from the beginning of this, talked about zero COVID. Well, we're going to keep locking you down until we ain't got a single case anywhere, right? And we got a single case anywhere. We're going to lock you down again. And you'll stay locked down. And as an Australian MP, George Christensen, pushed back on this. He spoke up and talked about it in Parliament. So the response to that is for Facebook to delete it. Here's what he had to say. On Tuesday, George Christensen was at the center of a controversy. He told the Australian Parliament lockdowns and masks were not effective in stopping the virus. He said, "When will the virus end? How many more freedoms will we lose due to the fear of a virus which has a survivability rate of 997 out of 1,000? It's time we..." And actually, it's much better than that. Because, again, we've talked about how they are rigging the numbers, the casualty figures, and so forth. It is medical malpractice. The people that are being killed by medical malpractice. And by attributing to the virus, other causes of death. Anyway, he says, "It's time we stopped spreading fear and acknowledge some facts. Masks do not work. Fact. It has been proven that masks make no significant difference in stopping the spread. Lockdowns don't work. Fact. Lockdowns don't destroy the virus, but they do destroy people's livelihoods and people's lives. And studies have shown that they can even increase mortality rate." And so because of that radical speech, that dangerous speech, Facebook deleted it. And so this article here put out by Reclaim the Net, their comment is, "Facebook continues to insert itself between the citizens and their elected officials." No, that's not what's going on at all. Facebook is pushing a global tyranny, where you're not allowed to question anybody. Just shut up and screw your freedom of speech. Say the Nazis, like Schwartz and Nazi. Tom Luongo says, "Now is a time to strike at the root of confidence. Government is the ultimate confidence game." It's what we're just talking about with the fiat currency. "Its power rests on the idea of enforcing issued edicts through public pressure and a policing that is unchallengeable." By saying things like, "Screw your freedom, we're the experts." Charles Lipson, writing in Real Clear Politics, says, "The problem we face beyond the specifics about crime, COVID, duplicity, and social division is a palpable breakdown in public order. At the same time, the public has lost confidence in our government officials and the institutions that they lead. The breakdown of order and the erosion of public confidence are deeply intertwined because we count on our leaders and institutions to give us reliable information, to provide a stable environment so each of us can go about our lives and abide by the same rules that we all do." Which brings us back to what I said in terms of the Christian aspects of this. It is an abomination to God for people in power to have unequal scales and measures, to cheat, to lie, steal from people. It is an abomination to kill babies. It is an abomination. Nobody had expected at the time that they would inject people with toxic injections. But as we look at the extent of this, I don't have time to get into it, but The Verge is actually shaming and calling for censorship of a social media platform that is only verified medical professionals, doctors and nurses. You've got to be verified to get there. And they said they don't allow people to post comments. They only post articles. But when you look at the comments, they said, it's just filled with doctors who say this vaccine is experimental. It's dangerous. We need to have informed consent. The masks don't work and so forth and so on. Said, you've got to shut this down. We need politicians censoring the doctors and nurses. We need politicians, Nazi politicians like Arnold Schwarzenegger, saying, screw your freedom. We're not going to let you speak up. We are the politicians. We will decide what the health care is going to be, and we're going to even decide what the health care choices are going to be for doctors. That's how upside down this world has become. Thank you for joining us. That's it for the broadcast today.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.